Well?
It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Hello and welcome and Happy New Year to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me, as always...
Gil Swallows.
Wow. It's from Scary Movie, right?
You like that one, right?
Yeah, it was good. His name is Ralph.
My name is Ralph. Sorry, I totally forgot what you said.
Usual co-host.
I saw that you brought the clock up, though.
Yes. Okay. And like I said, Happy New Year's. So I hope everyone had a great 2019 celebration. Happy New Decade. Holiday. All that jazz. Now,
you know what I did? The first thing I did in the new decade?
What?
Went right to sleep.
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, well, I had to work in like 3 hours.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what I did. Probably the same. Yeah. All right. We'll probably play a game and then went to sleep. Anyway. So we're back for the new year, which means, as always, is that we are going to start off with today's episode of the top 10 movies of 2019. Or the best movies of the year.
It's a moment of hesitation.
Whatever. No, because I was confused top 10 and saying best movies of the year. Like, there's so many different ways of saying that title. So, like, that's what Ralph and I will be doing, and that's all we'll be doing. There's no reviews or anything. No recent discoveries, none of that.
Don't expect
that's
me to. I'm just going to say the name of the movie, and we're moving on to the next one.
That's terrible. That's a terrible way of doing it. We have a few things around it, but we're talking about best movies. Best movies. We're wrapping up 2019 in films. And this whole January month, we'll be discussing TV shows. That's the next one next week.
And we're entering the roaring 20s.
Right, roaring 20s. Best TV shows next week, and then we're doing our discoveries the week after. So stay tuned for all that jazz. I think that... I'm going to say this now before I forget. Is that you can follow the show. And all of our other countdowns, find out what those are over at otherpodcast.com. I'm going to do some site rearrangement where, like, we have enough top 10s, Ralph, and top 5s or whatever over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
That I can actually make a page separate and separate everything, like the TV shows only, the movies only.
Wow.
So I'm going to start, like, rearranging things to make it easier for people
really find the life
to access. Well, just to make the site more approachable.
No, I'm just saying I watch too much movies.
Yeah. No, it's fine. And not to mention we have other guests. I can separate into a lot of those subcategories, keep it, like, nice and clean. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I got that for Christmas.
Oh, okay. Yes.
He's staring at a replica of the Ora Nishii sword from Kill Bill.
In my head, the song did start playing.
Dude, instantly, right?
Instantly. Well, that's why I did a double take.
Yeah.
I looked and I was like, what's that? I thought it was an umbrella. And I was like,
yeah, my friend handed it over.
Flowers on it. And I was like, wait a minute.
My friend handed it over. We instantly said, like, silly rabbit tricks. Like, we just did that instantly. It's great. Great. I clearly like movies. So you can follow us there. Like I said, otherpodcast.com. Over there, we have all the previous bonus episodes that we're not be doing those kind of bonuses anymore. Nope, we're going to change it up. We're going to change. 2020 is a new year, new us, new me, all that stuff, they say. We're changing some stuff just to make it more interesting, make it more dynamic here. Otherwise, you can follow, you can send us feedback or questions or any of that sort. You can talk to us over at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Send us stuff there, not to mention our Twitter account, which we never use, but I will respond if people use it. We're so bad with social media. And let's see all that stuff there. See all that stuff. It's all on there. Now, we can start. I would say we always start with the question of how was 2019 for you, Ralph? Oh, for us.
Did we start that question?
I think so. I think that's something I started last year.
Oh, okay.
If I remember correctly.
Last year, okay.
Last year, 20 movies for 2018.
So then you asked me how was 2018. So this is the first time you're asking me how was 2019.
Yeah, in movies.
Oh, okay.
How did it feel for you?
Well, I decided to, I told myself that I needed to go to the movies more this year.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
I did, according to Letterboxd.
And also, but how many of those were for your kid?
Does that matter?
No, it doesn't. If it mattered to you.
I don't know. I always make sure to have fun with my kid. So, yeah. I mean, I like movies.
I said that as a joke.
What kid doesn't like media? So, whatever. So, I mean, I just take him to see things. And he likes the randomest movies, but for the randomest reasons, not for the right reasons.
Well, no.
But as is a kid.
He's just a little ball of reaction.
Exactly. How was 2019? I don't know. It was all right, I guess. I guess it felt long because I felt like a lot of things came out a year ago. I guess because things come out so fast now.
Hmm.
And even once they come out, like the first half of the year stuff came out on Blu-ray already forever ago, right?
Yeah.
Like, while the second half of the year was starting. Right? A lot of the first half of the year was already in Blu-ray, already and stuff. Especially the early stuff in the year, right? And then it feels like, oh, that came out. And then that went by. And then it's on deep discount sale because it's been like a year since the movie.
Yeah, you give
out.
A movie, just like a game too. Like I give, because I'm so slow with games. I don't mind waiting a year or two. Are you surprisingly cheap or they're like on the,
right.
the subscription right. or whatever. They're free for that month or whatever the hell they do. And it's like, great. I'm like, great. Like, yeah, I'll get Detroit Become Human now.
Yeah.
I don't have to get it the day one.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I procrastinated so much that it was free on PlayStation Plus.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I did.
Right, so what I'm saying is that I feel like a lot of movies come out, and then you're like, man, I guess that movie's been out for forever. But it hasn't. But it's still been the same year.
Right.
And then you realize, like, that movie came out this year.
Yeah.
And you're like...
So are you saying that the year is positive, or you feel like it's very similar to 2018, that you can't even discern the two of them?
No, I really couldn't discern. I mean, it was kind of...
Well, but then I'll say this. Then did you like 2018 in movies? Then, because that means if you did, that means you liked 2019 too, then.
I don't know. I did feel overall... I always feel like we are always in a rush towards the end, right? The rush in the end. I felt like this year, movies were more accessible to me. As in, like, accessible to the fact that we're... The bigger movies were on more streaming sites, I guess.
And even some came from like, you know, like
some
Netflix.
Came from those, exactly. Yeah. And it's funny, it's like, I didn't even watch those. That's the best part.
We saw one.
I think one, yeah.
Irishman.
Right.
I mean, that was an accessible Netflix one.
That came out this year? I'm kidding. But yeah, that was
on the show.
So yeah.
Four shows ago.
Right. I'm kidding. But no, because that's what I'm trying to get at, is that I felt like even though it was accessible to me, something about on being on social media, and I think it's the Netflix issue. Really, it's only on Netflix that I have this issue, is that it's on Netflix, and I'm like, oh, I'll watch it later.
I mean, that happens a lot because there's also a lot of content, and you have to discern what to watch, and then you end up like being a defeatist, and you're just picking something you're comfortable and know already.
Right, like The Office.
Or for me,
actually,
it's
I'm
like,
not that guy.
For me, it's West Wing or Gilmore Girls. But like even those, actually, I don't revisit immediately back. But I watch something like I've seen before, like The Simpsons. When I'm watching now, it's my rewatch. But it's when I have nothing else to watch, I'll watch another episode.
No, for me, it's sports. For me, I just watch sports.
That's fine. That's what's those here.
I don't like to go back to stuff a lot. Actually, I'm very
well. The Simpsons I'm watching for Prosperity. Like there's a lot of some episodes
so
I haven't seen
long,
before.
I don't mind going back to stuff like that. But
I've been discovering episodes like, oh my god, I've never seen
that.
This one.
I've never seen it.
Yeah. Like, wow, I've never seen this one. Yeah. I've seen this one 10,000 times or
right.
whatever. Anyway, so
but overall, yeah, I don't know. I guess.
Well, I think this was a great year for movies. Every year is a great year, like a legit amazing year, because if you know where to watch, you know what to find, you can find anything.
No, that's
true. There's so many artists, so many different studios. I know that Disney seems like they're taking over, but even if their grand takeover happens, there's still so many other companies that are making movies. There's like 1,000 movies a year off. There's no way they can't.
Yeah, I like to put it through the perspective of like from somebody who's not like us.
Yeah.
A cinephile or a guy who I'm a guy who definitely is above the
average. It must suck if you only watch like 12 movies a year.
What I'm trying to say is for people like those, and I try to look at it from that perspective, it didn't feel
this movie sucked. Maybe Men in Black is good. No, that movie sucked. Let's hope this one is good.
Well, it's funny because you say that, but at the same time, like a lot of my movies are bigger movies, right?
Yeah.
Not a lot of indie movies, but I don't watch as much.
Well, not indie, just not big blockbusters.
Just not big blockbusters. Right. And I don't. I don't watch that much that are not big blockbusters. But at the same time, I feel like I also watch more that aren't that most people wouldn't. I do. It's just when I look at it through the perspective of the lenses of like your average moviegoer, which I'm definitely not, but I feel like I am at the same time because I like a lot of those movies. It didn't feel like it was like that huzzah. It's always a race to the end, which is what we are in, with everything coming out towards the end.
Yeah.
But I feel like Disney has managed to somehow, at least this year and last year, to come out with a lot of good stuff in the beginning, like in the first half of the year,
and then
second half
suck
of the
up.
Year.
Yeah, so.
Well, suck up people's, you know, what's it called, time and resources to go see something again
yeah.
in the second half of the year.
Okay. Well, I think in blockbuster terms, like movies that are like movies that cost like over $100 million, I made, you know, that wasn't every screen, right? Every movie theater was that. Like, I think in general, those, that's a bad year for 2019.
Yeah.
Because like the summer was a huge slog of horrible movies.
Well,
until
you have
Once
to,
Upon a Time in Hollywood came out.
Well, when you have like to start August. The summer to, you know, to add Avengers to it, which a lot of people did, I think.
Right. It's like Avengers, Avengers was, I mean, it wasn't summer. It was still spring.
Still spring.
But yeah. Like, that was, maybe there was one more in there that was pretty good, and then it was like a slog of really bad, like, big movies.
Yeah.
You know? And it sucked. I'm sure it sucked for a lot of people. Obviously, I knew, Midsommar came out for me, but no one heard. Like, no one, obviously. So, like, not many people knew. But Hustlers came out, too. That was a big surprise hit for a lot of people. It came out in August, too. So, that was good. But overall,
it was like end of summer.
It wasn't the big, right, August, right? It's like, yeah. And then this year, 2019 also had, like, because I was a little worried. Like, this might be a legit bad year. Because, not just because of that, but because, like, it doesn't seem like there's a lot anticipating. Also, didn't feel much until Doctor Sleep for me, which was November, and
right.
But once late October, November, and December hit, I'm like, Jesus, all these amazing movies are coming out all at once.
Now it's an annoying thing.
Yeah, and well, I don't find it annoying, but
I find it's the way it is. I have a life to lead, you know?
Well, no, I mean, just pick whatever you want to watch more.
Yes and no, it's like more, it's more like what's accessible and...
But it just came out.
To a certain extent, yes and no.
I mean, some.
If you don't watch it that week or that second week, if it's not big enough, it's not going to stay out there either. Because sometimes you don't have time to watch everything the same week that it came out. You wish you do, but if it's not your Star Wars, and then Star Wars comes out the next week, forget it. Star Wars just took over 15 extra movie theaters, you know? Or movie, you know, what's it called?
Yeah,
theaters to go see it, screens. And all of a sudden, the one that had like 8 screens now has 2. And now you're limited to... 2 times you can watch it.
Well, I'm not talking about the accessibility of these movies. I'm talking about the quality of these movies.
No, I'm talking about the accessibility of that. That when they come out that close to each other in those last 3 months, it's annoying because if there's one movie that's supposed to be the gigantic blockbuster that they obviously throw all the money towards, it knocks out all these other poor little guys, you know? And then you're like, well, you're fucked because if you didn't see them like the release of or the week after, you're kind of fucked in watching them.
I mean, yes and no, but yeah. I mean, a lot of people were bummed out by Star Wars. A lot of movies are staying in theaters right now. They took out a lot of screens out.
Yeah, no.
For example,
yeah.
So like Little Women probably wouldn't have the audience it has, surprisingly, if Star Wars didn't suck.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For example, like it's not Star Wars is 1-2 theaters probably. But if it was like Force Awakens popular, it would still be like in 5 theaters.
You know, right. Yeah.
Maybe not right now, but maybe even now.
Maybe even
now. Or something. And I think this 2019, more than most years, recently anyway, in recent memory, the last 2 months have been really stellar with movies. Because a lot of movies do wait till the end for consideration reasons. Recency bias to make
recency bias, I think, is like
it's a lot of reasons why they do it. Yeah. Also, economically speaking, it makes more sense for the studios to release it then, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, well, the majority of the people who don't.
Yeah. Also, during the holidays. Right.
So it just makes more sense.
So I think the last
shut these kids up for a couple hours. So
let's
the movies.
The last push of the year was extremely good compared to a lot of years recently.
How do I escape from my family? Let me go to the movies.
I mean, we do that. I mean, I do that. But
don't speak for me.
No, I was gonna say. Well, we have done that, but I do that. More.
I mean, this year the thing I did, which is the first time I've done in the longest time, is go watch a movie with. Anybody like my aunt, one of our aunts. Yeah. I haven't seen a movie with her since I think she said, I forgot the name of the movie. Bro, I was like 10.
What'd you see with her?
Uncut Gems.
Oh, so it wasn't just the cousins you took, it was my.
No, she went there too. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. What did she think of the movie?
No, she liked it. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. What a crazy movie. Also, this year's, you know, like every year also, like you can see a lot of themes, culturally speaking, a lot of what people are talking about, not just on social media or online, although mainly there, of course, but on water coolers, with discussions with people, with family, with friends. You see a lot of the dispersions of like privilege. There's a lot of movies about privilege and. It's downfalls, pitfalls, or like the asshole nature of it. The fact that there is all this wide gap between people who have privilege and people who don't. A lot of movies like that. Like you think of Ready or Not, you think of Knives Out, you think of a lot of movies. Not just one or two, Rob. There's like a few of those. You think there's a lot of movies about the male gaze or like the toxic masculinity going on. There's a bunch of movies that kind of reference that or are really all about that. And then some great movies for from the female perspective going on this year, 2019, obviously ending with Little Women, but, you know, you think of also Radio 9, maybe a little bit, and or like Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, right, which is directed by a woman, but it's all about, like, male relationships, which is interesting. Yeah, really good stuff. Really, a really good year. So, we usually, before we start the countdown here on the show, on Another Movie Podcast, we start off with our missed opportunities, which is movies that were not going to be on the list because we didn't get to see them. For whatever reason, we didn't see them. We wish we saw them. These are like the list.
Once I say mine, you're going to be like, man, you got some pick. I know what movies you're going to pick. There's no worry.
You want to go first or you want me to go first?
I can go first because I think mines are way more like upset.
More upsetting? Okay, yeah. Go ahead then.
I'm going to start off with the two weakest.
Okay.
And I think the third one that I'll mention is, might be a movie in 2020, but I'm not too sure. So Art of Self-Defense, didn't get to see that one.
Yeah.
Jojo Rabbit, did not get to see that one. Mm. 1917, is that this year? Is that 2020?
I'm counting 2020 because it's probably coming out this weekend in theaters.
Okay, so that's what I was curious about. So.
And this is almost mid-January, by the way.
Okay.
We recorded.
All right, I'll continue.
Yeah.
Little Women. The Farewell, Marriage Story, and Parasite.
Ouch. Fuck. Those last two especially. Ouch. Marriage Story is like on Netflix.
You know what? There is zero excuse for Marriage Story except that it's really close to home.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so like, and that's like one of the reasons.
I didn't say it was easy to watch.
No. Well, it's really close to home, but I kind of wanted to watch it on my own.
Yeah.
That's the kind of movie I don't like to watch with my wife, because then she'll just be like, do you feel like that? And I'll be like, oh, no, like Jesus Christ. But yeah. So I'd rather watch it on my own. I just have not free time to watch it on my own.
Yeah. So my missed opportunities, a little longer, obviously, but movies, I think you've heard of most of them, like, surprisingly. I'll skip a couple, though. So one of these, A Hidden Life, which is that dude who did The Tree of Life.
Never saw Tree of Life.
Terrence Malick.
Okay.
I hear that's one of his best movies since The Tree of Life.
Oh, okay.
And he's a very hard director to watch, but I really do love The Tree of Life, so maybe. Anyway, Dark Waters, the guy who did Carol, did that movie. I haven't heard anything about it, which makes me worried. Climax, Gloria Bell. Honeyland, which I hear is a documentary that'll fuck your life up. Honey Boy is a...
Daddy Carol.
That one is a... What's that guy's name? From Transformers.
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf is... he plays like his... He wrote screenplays about his own childhood growing up as a child actor. And he plays the father, the asshole father that he grew up with in that movie and something like that. So that's an interesting viewpoint already. I want to see it for that reason. Pain and Glory, which is a Moldovar's newest movie from Spain. Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Everyone's been talking about this fucking movie. Everyone. Well, critically, I mean.
Haven't heard anything about it.
And I have it, but I just didn't get to see it. It's, I think, French. I'm not sure. Dolomite Is My Name. That's a fucking amazing comedy or biopic or whatever. And that's
you know what? It
Netflix,
was like, it so. Made this like small little splash. And I didn't know what it was about. So if I had known, maybe I would have added it to my list.
Yeah, it's Eddie Murphy's comeback
Murphy,
movie.
Yeah.
Really good comeback movie. Beach Bum, which is that Matthew McConaughey movie. It's on Hulu right now, actually. The Farewell, I also missed, Ralph.
Yeah.
Farewell, I missed. Apollo 11. I remember it came out early in the year. A lot of people were raving about how it was using footage from the Apollo 11 footage that no one ever released, and they made it like, I think something like that. I don't remember, like a great docudrama thing. Apollo 11?
Yeah.
No, we didn't see it. Mm. Well, I didn't. The King on Netflix, I heard was great. Didn't see it.
Which was that?
It's The King with Timothy Chalamet. It was Netflix pushed it a lot when, if you ever logged on during the month of November, I think.
Yeah, probably should.
21 Bridges, I didn't want to see. Waves, there's a movie Waves by the guy who did Acrecia and It Comes at Night.
Okay.
I hear that's really, really good. Two Popes, which just I think just came out.
It just came out, so I didn't add it.
It's on Netflix, but yeah. I guess it barely counts. Maybe Judy Garland biopic with Renee Zellweger. All these are kind of missed. There's all others too, of course. The Mountain, One Child Nation, Atlantix. I haven't seen a lot of these. So, and obviously, I put in here too that
if I knew about them, I probably would have added them to my list.
There's probably like two movies, maybe Two Popes counts, but 1917 definitely counts as 2020 for us, or non. It doesn't count as anything non-starter because. It came out too late for us to watch. Yeah. So, all right.
Yeah, I don't get screwed.
Right. So that's our missed opportunity. So if you're wondering where are all these movies in our list, that's why. So without further ado, let us begin our top 10 movies of 2019.
Now, for something like this, you're going to need two guns. The one you're going to use and a backup. You want something with more stopping power than a .22. You definitely don't want a silencer. You want to make a lot of noise to make the witnesses run away so they ain't going to be looking at you. But not the noise a .45 makes, because that makes too much noise and a patrol car can hear it a few blocks away at least. The cops call a .32 a woman's gun because it's easy to handle, don't do the damage a .38 does, but, you know, it does enough. It will be late, so the tourists from Idaho wouldn't be there. They'd be in bed. And him being down there in Little Italy, maybe he'd be more comfortable, more relaxed. It was his birthday, so he'd be there with his wife and his kid, which in this case, that's good because that's the point. They should have to see what it's like. He'd already been drinking, which would have slowed him down a lot. His bodyguard would be with him, and Joey himself could be carried too, but then the piece would be in his wife's purse probably.
And this time, Ralph, I think you started us off that other time, so I'll start us off.
Right? Okay.
That's what we're doing. Yes, we are.
You're going to give it to me to finish? I'm so sorry.
You said that every year, you know, which is funny. All right. My number 10 movie of 2019, it's Jojo Rabbit.
Huh, nice.
Which I and I know you haven't seen it, and it, I know that you will watch it soon when it comes out, I'm sure. I can't wait for you to experience this movie. I know that our sometimes co-host, Luke, he saw it and he loved it. It probably would have made his higher on his list.
A young boy into last place? Okay.
Probably. Yeah. A young boy in Hitler's army finds out his mother is hiding a Jewish girl in their home. That's the very, like, just, like, bland synopsis of it. But really, this movie, which stars Roman Griffith Davis as Jojo, is he's a very creatively, like... boy that lives in Nazi era Germany, in the heart of it, a huge, he's like a Hitler youth, he's part of the Hitler youth group in the beginning of the movie, and it's a comedy about him and his experience throughout the towards the end of this Third Reich war going on, and his mother's played by Scarlett Johansson, and he has a best friend, imaginary friend of Hitler, played by the writer director Taika Waititi, who is really funny in the movie. And I think this movie, it's, you know, a lot of people are talking about this movie and having certain reactions to it. Some are predictable, some are not, regarding whether or not it's okay to really make fun of or, like, bring a comedy or bring something light-humored to something so horrifying that happened in our real history. And is it too soon, right? That kind of thing. People are talking about it in this way. And I think that if you think of...
too soon.
Springtime for Hitler, what's that movie, The Producers? I mean, that came out, what, in the 80s? So, like, that's, you know, but obviously people took that movie also negatively back then. I think this movie, I think it's very appropriate that this movie comes out now, and I think it's more than perfectly within an artistry wheelhouse to make a movie with the subject matter. I think it's perfect. And the movie has a deft touch to its comedy, and even more importantly, it has a really nice touch, a really good intricate attention to the emotions revolving around this boy growing up in a land that he doesn't understand is so bad. And the people around him, the Jewish girl, the mother, are trying to guide him away from... obviously such bad organization as the Third Reich. So, like, it's a really tender movie, surprisingly powerful in emotion. Sam Rockwell's pretty funny in the movie, if you like him. He's a really good shtick in it. Yeah, it's a really fun movie. I know that some people have problems with the way he talks to the Jewish girl, especially towards the end, a certain manipulation tactic the boy introduces, but I think the boy always acts like a boy the whole time. Like, it's very well acted and well realized as far as children acting go. And yeah, it's very emotional. I liked it a lot. Jojo Rabbit's pretty great. So I recommend it. It's my number 10.
Nice.
Your number 10.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah. Totally missed out. And then it made a little resurgence back in the end of the year. to try to get more people to watch it, I guess, or something. And then I
did it. Did it? I didn't know that.
So there was one showtime at theaters. I mean, I had big theaters, so I guess. And I was just like, I could maybe make it once if I move a lot of things out of the way. But I didn't.
Yeah.
Alas, I didn't. My number 10 is a documentary. Luke would be proud. And it's Netflix documentary, The Great Hack.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice.
So you watched this one earlier?
It's another one of my missed opportunities.
Okay. So, hey, look at that. Both our top 10s are very, our number 10s are very similar on our list, right?
Starting off one. So
this is what's probably one of the most informative documentaries I've had in a while. And you know, I don't like to get bogged down or caught into things about, you know, politics and stuff. Yeah, I don't really like it. I never did, because it's just, I feel like it's like a rabbit hole of just dumbness. But that's besides the point. And watching this Great Hack, I thought they did an amazing job of just kind of like how everything, like the domino effect, the how everything kind of worked out, who benefited from everything, why it benefited, what everything meant, what everything means, and kind of like really fortified my reasonings of why I make decisions of, you know, why I don't go on social media, why I try not to do this, why I try not to do that, yeah. You know, and it's just like, and it's very easy to like, you know, to fall into this thing where why you don't want to trust big corporate, or not even big, or how easy it is to for stuff like that to get hacked, because they don't care to solve your issues and stuff like that. So like the whole thing behind it, it was just crazy. And it's, and then, you know, and it leads to where explaining why you saw Mark Zuckerberg in front of a Senate and explaining how he influenced the Donald Trump campaign in Russia and all this stuff, and you're like, what's like, how did we get there? And they explain all that, and that was a really cool documentary to watch. And
yeah, go still back on my list.
Go back and explain it.
Well, you, I think always, it's in my phone. I think I downloaded it from Netflix. I still haven't seen it.
That's funny. So, at least you made the effort, right?
Right. No. No excuse.
No. Yeah. Right. So, but besides that, it was just a really cool documentary, and getting into the nitty gritty details that, just explaining all this bullshit, and kind of scaring you at the same time with how vulnerable and how easy it is to just use and abuse your data, and how your data is just used for anything and everything. And it's funny, because yeah. I think ever since then I've been really, really mindful, and it also has to do with age. I think it's a lot of where I am in my age, of where now it's very, I'm very mindful of how I use my, or what I want to log into, use my data for, and, you know, just what I even want to post. Take another reason why I'm not even part of social media that much, just because I don't want to put myself out there all the time for everything.
Yeah, well, I've always felt some confidence about that in general, yeah. But so, I never did it for privacy reasons.
So have I, but now I'm doing it almost just to be private.
Yeah,
just I because I don't want anything ever coming back to
well,
me.
Well, now it's great to have a good excuse, but before I didn't do it because
for
I was
sure.
Now,
well, that's what I meant about fortifying my, you know, yeah. my decision making already.
Yeah,
but yeah, definitely getting excuses. But it's such a great, great informative documentary, and I thought it was I could have. It was one of those movies that came out earlier in the year that I could have sworn that was like 2018, like late 2018.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is fucking no way it was. Yeah. But yeah,
that was like,
that was like April.
Yeah,
yeah, something like that.
Like spring or something. All right, so that's The Great Hack on Netflix. It's a documentary. Check it out, guys. I do really want to see this movie. So missed opportunities right there. We're on to number 9. My number 9 is a movie that we've discussed on the show. I think it made my number 1 or 2 in the halfway point. It is a movie called Perfect Strangers. Or okay. The Spanish title being Perfectos Desconocidos. A great year for foreign movies in general, by the way. A lot of great foreign movies out there. My short list for other movies that didn't make this list would have made it another, if I added them in, it would be 6. And I have 3 on this list, top 10 that are from different countries.
Nice.
Or 4. No, 3. Anyway, Perfect Strangers is a movie, is a description. What begins as a provocative party game quickly becomes a wild ride full of twists and textual tension in this comedy about the secrets we all carry in our pockets. Speaking of The Great Hack, right, and data in our ability, inability to get rid of our goddamn phones for one goddamn second.
You said something, I was looking at my phone.
Yeah, I know you were. It's funny. I don't know if you did it on purpose, but it was really well timed. This movie is Spanish speaking, but it's all set in one night, so it has like a little bit of a gimmick there. And the gimmick surrounding the eclipse and all that, I don't really care so much for. It's a nice thing. It's okay. But it's really the personal connections.
I think that's there because it's a remake of a movie, and they were just trying to do it from that remake.
Probably. I don't know. It feels very 90s, that little thing. But it's okay.
It did feel very 90s, yeah.
But the great thing about the movie is that...
Sorry. No. But at the same time, that 90s feeling was just like, oh, you guys are just Hispanic. You're totally just catching up to stuff.
Right. They just got... what's in the 90s?
Friends. I don't know.
Friends, Seinfeld. Right. Yeah, anyway. Anyway, so this movie is fantastic in its dialogue, especially the actors who are portraying, shouting out the dialogue. It's great time. Great timing. It's even though it's all one living room the whole time mainly. And the great thing about this movie as well is not just what they say or what they react to with words, is the in between moments and glances before they say whatever they're gonna say. And it's really funny, and it's funny how these people who've known each other for a good chunk of their lives, maybe all their lives, walk into this house knowing one thing and leave knowing nothing/. Everything else about their spouses, about their best friends, about their best friends' wives. You know, it's really great and funny and fucked up and kind of true a little bit in the, you know, uses comedy to accentuate the truth of the, you know, the power of what we have in our pockets all the time, which is this phone and the secrets that we do keep, whether we know it involuntarily or on purpose. And it's a really interesting portrayal of human condition in our day and age, and this is a really good movie. I really highly recommend it. Came out earlier in the year. It technically came out in 2018, but it first got released in the United States 2019. So it's a 2019 movie. Perfect Strangers. Check it out. That's my number 9.
Nice.
Buff.
Good choice. Good movie. My number 9 is a The overlords of Disney have decided to choose one for me. And my number 9 is Spider-Man Far From Home. And I didn't really want to, like... Mm. I was really trying to avoid picking movies. But I was like...
Movies?
Movies of, like, the gigantic Marvel, you know, empire/Disney empire.
I don't think you should feel bad about that.
No. I don't feel bad about it. What I was trying to... I was just trying to, like, make sure, like, is this really a choice? Did I just have fun with it? Or is it really just a good, like, but you know, you go back to it and like it's a really fucking good movie. Like,
well, I see like a gimmick thing here with the Great Hack and the Spider-Man.
Oh, Spider-Man, yeah, for sure. So it's something
Hack. Because of the villain, right?
Yeah, because of the villain, yeah. And it was just a really good movie. I mean, I remember watching, I think I'm pretty sure I saw this movie twice in theaters.
Me too, actually.
And it's, I always find somebody who hasn't seen it yet. I'm like, I'll go with you. So it gives me more reasoning to go not by myself the second time. But yeah. Watching this movie was I liked it a lot. I thought it was a really cool, like, something that Star Wars couldn't do. Character develop, what's it called, Spider-Man, and then, like, you know, still spring up issues for stuff. And I thought it was a cool villain, non-villain, and it made fun of the current villain thing that we have going on with, like, Marvel stuff, which is a world-ending villain kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Always has to be the bigger, better thing, right? The bigger, better deal. I'm always going to bring that out from the mask. And it's... I really enjoyed watching this this villain who was really kind of like a nobody, but still make this gigantic splash because he just knew how to use our technology and the public perception.
Right.
Yeah, it was really cool, and I think it really went well with with Spider-Man, because you still remember that he's still a high schooler, like, it's just because of everything that happened in Avengers Endgame and everything like that. So it was really cool. It was really well done, and how they did everything. I thought everything they're doing so far with Spider-Man has been really good. There's a problem with the trilogies. We'll see how the third one does, because 1 and 2 were great when Spider-Man 1 and 2 came out.
Yeah,
and the third one was kind of rough, holding my collar.
Oh, because of Sam Raimi's trilogy.
Yeah, Sam Raimi's. I love Sam Raimi's trilogy, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll see how the third one does.
Well, the one thing that Sam Raimi's trilogy, even though the third one has that emo streak and wasn't as good by far, one thing that it has that this trilogy will never have is that it has one singular vision. the same director.
That's, yeah, that's 100% true.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different.
Yeah.
So I will never have that.
Right.
I'll miss that from this trilogy. But still, they're knocking it off right now.
They are. They're doing a really good job. Yeah, so I really did enjoy that. I just enjoyed how they kind of changed the pace of what a Marvel movie could be. And that was good because, it, especially what after what just happened in one of the bigger movies that came out earlier in the year, which was Avengers Endgame? Right? Endgame? Yes.
Endgame, yes.
Yes, Endgame.
That 3, right? Marvel 2. That was also this year.
What?
2019 also came
out. Yeah, that was before Endgame, I think. Right, yeah. It was before Endgame, right. Then it was Endgame, then it was this one.
Gotcha. All right, so that's Spider-Man Far From Home. Home, yeah. And that was, I think, a July release or something. My number... That's number eight. My number 8 is a... Well, Netflix movie. Here it comes. It's Marriage Story.
Is it 8 or 9? I just did 9.
You're doing nine, but I started. So
you did.
So
my number 8. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. There. So my number 8 is Marriage Story.
Marriage Story. Okay.
Uh-huh. It's a it's a Noam Baumbach's best movie, in my opinion. I know a lot of people love The Squid and the Whale. I like that movie too. Never I like it. While We're Still Young very well. I like that movie probably more.
Never saw
I hated Greenberg. Couldn't stand it.
Never saw it.
Although if I see it again now, I probably wouldn't understand it more. I
haven't seen any of these guys' movie.
Really?
Everything you said.
Francis Ha. Nope. Mistress America.
No,
Mistress America is really funny. Man, okay. Then you're not. Then you don't know who Noam Baumbach is. Wow. So if you had seen this movie, I wonder what would it. Well, I mean, I don't know. I went in this movie thinking of Noam Baumbach movies, and this is his most. That's probably the most. I don't want to say the most unlikeliest because he does make a lot of personal stuff, a lot of the same type of person that he recognizes either in himself or in his loved ones.
Sure.
So like that's those kind of characters they are. And usually it's much more in the funny section or like they are much more like quirky in a way. But anyway, this has none of that in a way that it's much more adult. Marriage Story should really be called Divorce Story. It stars Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson.
But isn't that the whole joke of the name of the movie?
Yes.
Is that everybody, almost every marriage ends up in divorce?
A lot of people compare this to Kramer versus Kramer, for example, because it's very similar in tone and all that. But Marriage Story... I think it's an amazing movie. I almost took it out because I wasn't sure. You know, these movies, like, it's hard for me to relate to them because I've never been married, don't have a kid. This couple has a kid together. And they're going, you know, they love each other very much. The movie opens with them describing each other to a therapist. It's like they write down words like, what makes, like, who is Scarlett Johansson to me, right? And she would go, who is Adam Driver to me? Like, what kind of person is he? And the movie opens with this great montage of, with the voiceover of describing who they are. It is such a great setup for what's going to be happening throughout the movie and how the little things turn into bigger things that lead to like, oh, I need a divorce lawyer now, or like, oh shit, she is coming after me. I can't, like, you know, and then I have to respond. If I do nothing, and then you see the progression of the snowball effect of, like, their lives getting ruined, money ruined, relationships ruined, because they can't not fucking compete with it. You know, they can't have and there's no such thing as an amicable divorce, especially with a child involved. As a matter of fact, the child is why a lot of the reasons that happened in the movie. And but you see throughout the thing is that even though the movie starts off with the relationship heavily on the rocks / not there anymore, it's the realization that it's never coming back. And all this stuff is in this movie. And along the way, the filmmaking of this movie has like amazing like character, like it must have, I don't know how they must have drawn it out every time they're in a scene together or separate, where the blocking of where everyone moved at the right time with the camera and with the other person that they're talking to, it's such a great like fluid thing going on in the movie. It's really well paced, very well placed. It's like a very intricate stage play on top of a very good movie, if you want to compare that. And you know, and I know a lot of people say that the movie is hopeful at the end, and I see the hope that they're talking about, you know, but in the end, this movie is the death about something, and it's hard to be positive about the death of something, especially the way the movie made me feel at the very end. I almost feel like we reviewed it with spoilers, so I can talk more about it, and I can't really disclose that right here. And like I said, I'm not terrible, and I'm not really the audience because I'm not married and all that, but I understood everything that was happening, and I fell for it, man. Horror movie. Yeah, horror movie. I think you'll like it. Marriage Story on Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to sound so dour about it. Some great funny stuff in it, too.
Sure.
Where he cuts himself, for example. But people who have seen it have know exactly what I'm talking about. The whole thing with serving the papers of divorce to him. Fucking hilarious. This is my favorite scene, actually, of the movie because of the way it was blocked. So amazing. So, yeah, check it out. Marriage Story on Netflix. That's my number eight.
Interesting.
Your number eight.
My number eight couldn't be further from whatever the hell your movie was. My number eight is Avengers Endgame, dude. Like, there's no way.
Oh my god, so much divorcing.
So much divorcing. By that being, people died. I thought this was a great wrap up to everything. That the culmination of everything that came out of Avengers or the whole Marvel 20-year.
This made my short list.
Yeah.
So that's pretty
high. It's a really good movie.
It's pretty high for me.
It's the 10 years of Marvel that happened, whatever, and the culmination of everything, like I said. I thought it was really cool. I love the dourness and the world that we're in before they decide to fix the wrong that they did. Right? Because they're the Avengers. They avenge. They don't. What was that line? What did he say? We avenge people. We don't. What's it called? Tony Stark says it or something.
Sorry.
That's basically that's why we're called the Avengers, because we avenge people. We don't prevent things or whatever, right? Because he got really mad about something like that. Whatever that line he says. Anyways, this was just crazy editing, crazy going back into all these crazy, this time travel thing going on, and I really like I said, that first half of the movie is really well done before they do this crazy heist time travel thing that they got going on. In the movie, I really enjoyed that world they're in. It's because it's a world of failure. It's a world and it's a failure they had to live up to and adapt to and stuff like that. And seeing your key characters like grow in different ways with your Captain America, who kind of is growing, but it's weirdly not. He's always been the same person, right? He's just helping out in different ways now. He can count it. And
everyone's rock, you know.
You're right, very much so, right? Exactly. And then same thing goes with watching Tony Stark being somebody we never thought he'd be, which is like a family man, you know, and stuff like that, and things of those natures. Yeah. So, like, watching all that and seeing stuff like that, that was, like, really cool. And I thought it was cool for, like, the characters and then why they decide to do what they decide to do in the movie, because I don't want to spoil shit, even though I'm pretty sure 99.9% of the people have seen this movie.
Right, I've seen this movie.
It's kind of hard not to, but yeah.
Yeah.
That being said, and then everything that leads up to it, and then even though there's not that much action, it's still such a great movie. They do such a great job with just dealing with dialogue, but putting everything together that dealt with, like I said, everything that had happened in 10 years of movies that led up to this moment.
In many ways, the decade of the 2010s was a decade for Marvel.
I mean, so very much.
Gigantic experiment.
Very much
that
so.
That ended right at the end of the fucking decade.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Very much so.
Such a good way of doing that. Real quick, it's not my top 10 at all, but to put my two cents in, this is an experiment that really worked. It's experimental. This movie, very little of its blockbuster wise is going against the grain and some stuff here. And ultimately choosing, I would say the top three characters that it focuses on, Thor, Iron Man, and Captain America, particularly Captain America's touch, is such a great way to hook an emotional thing to it that really worked out for me. And that's why I made my shortlist.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I would say so for sure. I think that's the most impactful. His, not to knock anything from Iron Man's or Thor's either. Thor,
their major arc get.
Of course, but I think Thor's like story is like a story that's not done yet, and it's also the comic relief, oddly enough, and then you have what's it called, the end of two big. Actors or whatever, or regimes of that nature. So yeah, that was it was just a really cool movie, really cool. I'm pretty sure I saw the movie like three times.
I can see a time heist anytime. I can just watch it.
Yeah, about heist and then time, anything that has to do with like time travel, I'm down.
Yeah, pretty much. And it has
makes it fun.
It does it in a really fun way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I said...
Like Hulk talking to that girl in the time heist, the Iron Man stuff, trying to get the thing back from the Avengers first movie. It's all fun. It's all really fun.
It's all very fun, yeah, exactly. Fun. And then it all culminates. I mean, some of it's like, okay. But For the most part.
Although cringiest moment, one of the cringiest moments of the year was the forced female empowerment.
Yes,
scene.
That was probably, that's what it was.
Okay. That's it worked better in the Infinity War.
It did, yes.
But like, it did it just a movie ago. Well, I mean, two Marvels, like 3 movies ago. But still, you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, I whatever. Hear you.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So it's great. That's your number 8.
It is, yes.
Avengers Endgame.
Correct.
It's the end of a saga, kind of. Or at least the start of a new one or something. They do something. My number 7 here is going to be, is actually, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. A faded television actor and his stunt double strive to achieve fame and success in the film industry during the final years of Hollywood's golden age in 1969 L.A. And this is the obvious movie by Quentin Tarantino, the writer-director. Obviously, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt. This is a Tarantino movie that I haven't loved or been excited for a movie of his since *Inglourious Basterds*, and before that, probably *The Kill Bill*. And for me, his best movie is still *Jackie Brown*, and that's still his best movie for sure. But like, I think that the power—I
think me and you were looking at it through the lens of this is a potential thing to Jackie Brown, like where it's a dialogue-heavy kind of movie.
Well, all his movies are dialogue-heavy.
No, but I would say I guess it's like not action-forced.
Right. I think, I think, you know, people call it a love letter to that golden age of Hollywood.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a golden age. I mean, that it stifled a lot of creativity and a lot of groups of people at that time. That was terrible. It was terrible for women. No, the women editors were great. No, that wasn't a perfect time, mind you. But the golden age of the studio system, the way people felt about movies back then, that's what the love letter's for. And it encapsulates that really well. And I like how his characters are not infallible. Like, they have a lot of things negatively going to them. They're not... They're archetypes, sure, but like you think of the Rick Dalton character and how his arc ends, or his story in the movie ends, in this hopeness, right, in this hopefulness. And you know, when you think of like, do these characters even deserve that kind of thing, whatever, it's not about that. It's just he's capturing a certain kind of actor,
yeah,
a kind of person that, you know, much like a lot of people in Hollywood system, no matter how talented you are, you need a little bit of luck to get ahead. And obviously, the framing that this movie uses to make that hopeful thing is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's so much fun, and like how it captures, because a lot of people, the hippie movement, the 60s, the decade, the whole era that they were in at the time ended with a gigantic bloody period because of the Manson murders. And with the way this movie both highlights and takes the power away from that by showing them so little until the very end, of course. And and the way he shows it at the end, it just says, it deflates a lot of the power that they shouldn't have had that made that final period. That's how I feel about it. Now, mind you, a lot of people do not feel that way about it and find that like a very bad way, very distasteful and all that. But I thought it was a very tasteful way to not do something that real history showed. And that's the Margot Robbie's character. I'm trying to be vague, but not vague. I think this movie is truly amazing. Brad Pitt is having a good year with Ad Astra in this movie. I think it's two really good performances that I haven't seen from in like over 10 years, honestly. And he nails it. His Bruce Lee fight, which I thought was really good. It has a great setup for the ending of the movie. Really good stuff in this movie. Really stylized, really fun to watch. The dialogue is fucking amazing. The acting is amazing. The look is amazing. It's all shot on film, which is pretty rare. It's all like real sets you see in the show. You know, all those old ways of making movies. He did it, you know. It's a good movie. It's also his first movie about movies, and I thought that I can, you know, he must have really toned it down before all the meta stuff he could have added. And I'm sure there's a lot in there. There's a few that I caught, but it's really good stuff. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is, I don't want to say return to form, it's not like the guy's ever been bad. It's just that the guy hasn't been as good as some of his like first half of movies. So yeah, Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. My number 7.
Interesting.
Your number?
Interesting you say it like that. But okay. Cool. My number 7 is a movie that has to do about a summer festival.
A movie that has to do with a summer festival?
Yes. In the middle. Somewhere.
Oh. I thought you were going to put the fire
Oh, God, no.
documentary.
No. That'd make any shirtless or anything.
I forgot all about that with winter right now.
Well, I
you said fire.
It's festival. Like one of the. I said summer festival.
Summer, sorry.
Yeah, I was like fire. I said fire. No, you just assumed I said fire. That's what it was or whatever. Anyways, a couple travels to Sweden to visit a rural hometown. Fabled midsummer festival. What begins as an idyllic retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult. You could say pagan, I guess.
Yeah, pagan, totally.
Yeah, anyways. This was a really fucked up movie. But it was one of those movies that I totally wanted to watch, and then I missed out on it, and then Redemption came back, and I got to watch it. Nice. Obviously, or else it wouldn't have been in my...
Did you watch it, the copy I got?
No, I saw it in theaters.
Oh, okay.
And then I... No, the copy you bought. The copy you bought, yeah. I did see the copy you bought. My apologies, yes. And then I... Because I was about to say, I was like, I thought you meant the copy you got. And I was like, no, I didn't see anything like that.
No. I bought the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I did see it like that. This is one of those cool things about the times we're in now, which the movie came out early enough where it came out enough time for me to be able to watch it on video on demand, which is, you know, whatever the case is.
Yeah. That's why we did that little bit of stint of movies when we were reviewing movies. We picked one movie that we missed out from earlier.
Yeah, that's what we tried to.
Way to do, yeah.
Because it's... We always miss out on something.
Maybe you wouldn't have seen High Life, right?
Right, stuff like that, yeah. Like that, yeah. Very much so, yes. So that being said, this was a super interesting movie to watch. It says a lot about, like, the cultures of the people who are, you know, like, all the people who end up being there, how kind of everything was kind of a big setup also, without spoiling anything. It felt like a setup because, I can't say it was, but... It definitely felt like a setup.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it did feel like you're watching what a lot of people would do, especially in those cultures, because there's different cultures there that are there to see the summer, the Midsummer Festival. And then you see how people react, and gotta love the Americans, how they react, and just like, yeah, okay. it's like a little bit of ultra-violence, and we don't care.
Yeah, but we can't get a coffee that's cold hot enough. We fucking bitch like no one's. We make no sense.
And we make zero sense. 100% true.
I constantly see contradictions everywhere.
Right. Yeah. So watching this though, it was cool, especially to see like almost the roles change, because you don't know who the main actor in this movie is until the movie kind of forces you to be like, no, this is not your person. Because the main actor, we think we're following this guy, but we end up following... You kind of know it's the girl. The girl kind of shines over. The girlfriend takes over. And it just kind of takes over completely for the girlfriend and really just leaves the boyfriend behind after a certain point in the movie. And you're just like, oh, shit. I thought it was kind of like equal parts a little bit here and there. You know, you're trying to see their reaction to things or something like that. Or how their relationship was going to be. No, no, no. Didn't give a fuck about that. And it was really cool to watch this, it's like almost an experiment, and I almost wanted to watch it. I almost felt like we the viewers are the guy doing his dissertation paper in the summer festival. The black guy, I can't think of the guy's name.
No, me either.
But I feel like we're him. I feel like that's us as the audience member who just want to be there to enjoy the ride and get everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also hesitant, right, in getting into what we're getting into, and but maybe a little bit too eager.
I would say so.
Yeah. So, and it was super cool how they had this whole crazy thing set up, and then this how it ends leads to this. I'm alluding to like none of it because I don't want to ruin anything for people.
Yeah.
But it leads to this crazy this crazy ending with how the festival ends for them, right? And it's like this bonkers thing about how it's not a, would you consider it a cult? I don't think so. I think it's just, it's so old.
I think it's, maybe.
You want to say it's a cult, but it's almost not, because it's like this so old pagan.
It feels culty, but it feels culty because I'm not in it.
Right, very much so. Right, and I would say that.
I'm sure other religions feel culty to me, right, exactly. And they may not be culty. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I would say the same thing. So, yeah, it does feel culty, but I know it's not because I'm not in it. But and watching these people and having them like, kind of like bring what's it called this emotion to and like how they overwhelm or how they just like wow and people to like. to this crazy extent, and it's just bonkers to watch overall, and it's very hard to watch with a kid around. But that was a crazy movie, crazy ride. I don't think I showed it to Ashley, and I probably should have, because she probably would have loved it a lot.
Yeah.
And she would have been like, I totally get that.
Yeah.
So that would have been fun to watch. But yeah, like I said, I'm really just trying to pussyfoot around the air the whole thing, because it's such a cool like ending that you should totally watch. And everything's there. Everything is in front of your face the whole time of what you're getting into. It's just really cool to watch, especially the beginning. The beginning is amazing, especially if you watch it twice the second time around. But you don't have to if you have it on like VOD, because the intro is kind of playing while the movie. This is like through the menus.
Yeah.
So you see like the whole like.
You know, history. I heard the director's cut makes the movie better too, because the director's cut adds like up to, its movies up to 3 hours.
Really?
With the director's cut, and I hear that it fleshes out even better of that stuff.
Okay.
But I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a super cool movie. Midsommar.
Yeah.
My number 7, I think.
Yes, it's your number 7. My number 6 now. Oh my God, I have this ticket to tell. My number 6 is a movie that definitely surprised me as to how much it stuck in the craw, you know, stuck in my mind, considering it came out earlier in the year. It is a movie called Under the Silver Lake. And here is the thing. Sam is a disenchanted 33-year-old who discovers a mysterious woman, Sarah, frolicking in his apartment's swimming pool. When she vanishes, Sam embarks on a surreal quest across L.A. to decode the secret behind her disappearance, leading him into the murkiest depths of mystery, scandal, and conspiracy in the City of Angels. Movie is written and directed by David Robert Mitchell, the guy who brought us It Follows, and stars Andrew Garfield. And this is a movie, like I said, came out earlier in the year. And the disenchantment part of that synopsis is what really grabbed me or made me think about this movie throughout the year and at weird times too. First of all, I compare this movie and its plotting and the way its mystery is both ridiculous and yet unfolds in a surreal, like it says, surreal, but also like interestingly, like very like interestingly relatable way, is I compare it to like a Chinatown like mixed with like a David Lynch movie, in a way, you know, with the surreal aspect anyway. And it feels like Chinatown to me very much, like a modern version of it, except that our lead character is a genuine embodiment, I think, of a certain type of person. That certain type of person being like this is one of those male masculine, like toxic masculinity movies that kind of falls into that for me.
Uh-huh.
And the way how this guy sees the world and how he lets things happen to him or he does things to other people in the movie. Andrew Garfield plays a real asshole, and but and an asshole to like himself first, and leads him to be an asshole reactionary to others. And I think that kind of portrayal of this kind of person, the single, too old to be single, kind of like toxic mentality that this guy has, is hand in hand goes with the mystery box nature of this movie. And a lot of the mysteries are not supposed to make a lot of sense. The main mystery ultimately does, because it's so ridiculous, but it's also ridiculous that we understand as a culture. This movie also taps into a lot of how people think the world works or how people fear the world might work. And I think it has a lot of interesting stuff. It also has a lot of good stuff in here about privilege, when you think of the class separation of the people he meets, the parties he goes to, the crazy lengths he has to go to be invited to a party, and then that, you know, the cookie that he has to take in order to get in, all that craziness. Yeah. I think a lot of the visuals are super memorable. It shows LA in a way I rarely see or haven't seen as much since probably that movie that about the male prostitutes. I forgot the name of the movie. There's very few movies show LA this way, and it really worked out for me. I didn't get to see it again, but this, a lot of the scenes still stick in my head really well. And it's funny how much of the plot, it says it's about this girl he's looking for. It's not about the girl. It's about something else. About something way different else. And but he chooses the girl to focus on as a reason to do something. But yeah. So yeah, I really liked the movie, bro. It really hit me.
I'm glad. Because I remember you not liking it on first.
No, when we first reviewed it, I was kind of mixed on it.
You were very mixed on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I was one of those movies where I think I liked it more, for sure, or more sounded.
Yeah.
And then I know you rewatched it, and I wish I had rewatched it because I think it's on Amazon. It's on
Amazon. I rewatched it in the summer, but I didn't rewatch it.
It's like
recently.
Amazon Prime, right? Amazon owns it, I think.
Well, I own it. I bought it, but yeah.
Oh, I think Amazon. Maybe it is. I think it's on Amazon. Maybe. Well, that or do you own it and maybe it's just in my collection?
Maybe.
Could be.
Could be.
That being said, so yeah, that was interesting for, yeah, it was a good movie. I haven't seen it again, and I'd be willing to rewatch it because I like those kind of movies. So those, like I said, Chinatown-esque movies or whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
I was trying to think of the other movie that's very popular.
There's definitely a few. I just
can't think of it.
Because it also has a very
take place in
film noir feeling, yeah, too. Yeah, it's right. A film noir kind of.
What's that movie called? It's black and white.
Shit.
It is what it is.
It's gone.
Yeah.
I don't. No, it's not working. Brain's not working.
That's okay.
Brain got a poop. So, what's your number?
Six.
Six.
My number six, sticking to Disney. Here it's
Disney
Frozen 2.
Really?
No, not at all. So my number six.
Oh my god!
I
can't wait to see you defend this.
No, I'm not. No fucking way. I just wanted to say, I was going to say that as my number 10, and I totally forgot to, so I had to bring it up somewhere.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, it's a good movie. Just not that. Nowhere in my top 10.
No.
No, my number six is Queen and Slim, and I know I talked a lot of negative things about this movie, or I felt like I talked more negatively.
Well, I was me too. I borrowed up first.
Yeah, you were mean to it, yes. But I think overall, what it wants to talk about, everything that it still does well. Some of the stuff is just a little bit over the top or a little bit meh, right? So the whole package isn't like there, I guess, with certain notes. Like they go a little too over, a little too under. But I still like the movie a lot for the character development, for what's going on with a lot of what it's saying just in general about society nowadays in America and how perspective is a gigantic thing. And how certain cultures look at it in a different way. And even if they do, not everybody, because everyone's human. And that's what I love about it. You don't have to bring it up. It doesn't have to hit you over the head. And when it talks about those things with as simple as, like, not every black person is on their side. But we don't need to say that out loud. But at the same time, we do need to show it. And by showing it means, like, well, we're just human because not every human's the same. Like, it's, without saying it, is there. And I love that. I love when a movie does that. And it does it well. That's the key part, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's by doing that. But they still, even though not everyone likes it, no one's there to... people are still there to willing to help or willing to... it's like this culture thing that I think... Like, any white person would have turned that other white person in that fast, right? But a black person, no way, because they know the system's against them, right? And it's so, like, they're, even though I may not agree with them, I'm just not going to help you. So I'm just going to do what I got to do, right? And that's so key, but that's a huge thing in culture. And I think a lot of people wouldn't get that. And a lot of people maybe feel that's, like, unrealistic, but I think that's the most realistic, which is really weird because I think if it was Hispanic, we'd kind of, I think it'd be a little bit mixed both, right? But it'd be more fear of, I don't want to turn somebody in and then I get in trouble on my end. But you know what I'm saying? I think you could finagle it either way.
Yeah.
So that was really cool to watch that aspect of it. And like I said, I really love our relationship of...
That starts from literally like negative one. Right,
dude, I've never seen, it's
so incompatible,
it's unreal,
in the civilization that they're in, but by the end they're not part of that civilization anymore. They're free to actually
exactly
like, love,
it's,
like,
it's amazing,
it's
right
good, yeah, I like that a lot,
yeah, me. I was gonna bring it up, the relationship between Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner Smith. I always forget her name, so I knew Daniel Kaluuya, but I love that role, and it is great because even, and I think looking back now in that scene where we had a big argument about how we didn't like the disparity of it, but it's that disconnection of that they're in their own world now, they're in their own thing, and showing this disparity also of what they're doing and what's going on in the real world, how they affected it, kind of works both ways as well. For the message of the part that's really good for me as the movie and how that did just a really good character development, and also how much it can be bad for just the bad tone and way of putting it into it. But not everything's perfect, right? Or else it would have been maybe somewhere higher in my list.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, really great movie, and I'm glad I definitely glad it was one of my movies that I wanted to watch throughout the year. So I'm definitely glad I got to see it when it did come out.
Nice. That's very nice. I did not see that coming. That's a very nice movie. It's Queen and Slim. Unfortunately, it's in between. Right? It's not out yet for VOD, but it's not in theaters anymore.
It's one of those weird movies.
Yeah, it's one of those exactly, in-between movies.
You gotta wait.
All right, so that's your number six. All right, so my number five is a movie, the first double. It's Midsommar.
Nice.
Wow. So, I know you didn't mention the plot before, but I'm just going to say real quick. A couple travels to Sweden to visit a rural? I can't say it. Rural Juro. Hometown's fabled Midsommar Festival. What begins as an idyllic retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult. That's according to the description. Ari Aster, writer-director here, he did Hereditary the year before, which also was a big hit with a lot of people and critics, horror movie fans especially. Yeah, Midsommar worked for me, and everything you said. It also accentuated this. For me, the thing that I clombed onto the most, because there's a lot of things in this movie, thematic maybe, that you can pick up on that you can relate to the most. And other people did a lot of the, like, the religious aspect. A lot of people did the class thing, the racial component to it. A lot of people, you know, did a lot of different things. For me, it was just always the relationship and how the story served the toxic, horrible relationship they were in. That you knew she shouldn't have been with that guy before they went on this trip.
Yes.
So, the you know, the fact that the movie starts off that... I mean, it starts off with really the death of her family and all that, and the wild, you know, traumatic experience she's going through, and she both needs a vacation, but from him, not with him, you know, something like that, you know. And Florence Pugh is, we talked about, you know, Brad Pitt being like one of his year for good movies. Florence Pugh as well, with Little Women being the standout role in that movie, and obviously, you know, head shouldering this movie so well. Performance wise, she's really good, man, and she's head and shoulders above. She's going to be in the Black Widow movie, I heard, so. It looks like we're going to be seeing her more, so that'd be good. She's good.
Oh, yeah, she's a co-star, I think, then, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, no shit.
I think she plays one of the family members or something.
Yeah, I think sisters. Or something. That's what I meant to say, but whatever.
I'm confused about that whole plot, by the way, because I thought Black Widow was like an only child. Like, what the fuck is going on? Anyway, whatever.
You're confused. I'm confused.
I'm confused, too. Okay. Anyway, but this movie also holds one of my favorite scenes I mentioned before, the hysteric crying scene. And... yeah, this movie works like a daylight horror movie that only it's horrifying. Its horrors isn't much the pagan stuff, although it does get there. It isn't just like the cultures, the rituals, the whatevers, the customs that these people hold in contrast to the American people, the main characters. It is the situations that this couple. What she has to experience because of the boyfriend and what she does to herself is so, like, excruciating. And because of what happens later on, because you know that there's this looming presence of whatever this pagan cult has in store for them, is it feels like that's whatever they're doing is making that worse, even though you don't know exactly what's going to happen yet when you first see the movie, of course. And I think this movie does a very great job of both foreshadowing and then highlighting like crazy how horrifying humans can be to each other.
Yeah,
you know, it starts with a relationship, it ends with that relationship, but along the way you see a lot of other human on human catastrophes.
Right.
It's a good movie, man. Midsommar, totally nailed it. I'm glad it's on your list too. That is my number five.
Yeah, I'm glad I watched it, man. Mm-hmm. I knew it was gonna be somewhere on your list.
Yeah,
there's no way it wasn't. No. You were too quiet.
I was too quiet.
Yeah, that being said, my number five is as we're getting down to the repeats.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, mine's is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Ooh.
And I mean,
I have one higher than you. You have one higher than me.
Very much so. Yes.
Nice.
So which I'm very curious as our next four.
Definitely.
I don't want to say it's back to true to form because I liked everything that Quentin's done, and I really love Hateful Eight.
You did. Okay.
So I really did enjoy Hateful Eight. And you know what? I haven't seen that whole – Netflix has this whole like hour and a half, four episodic version of Hateful Eight as like an extended director's cut. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No.
Yeah, you should look into Netflix for that.
What?
Look up Hateful Eight, and it's like just do it on your phone right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep talking.
And it's like every part that they break it down. Every part is like an hour long or whatever. Like, so even more dialogue. I haven't got into that, but I really did like it. And I think I liked it a lot for the roadshow. I know me and you went to go see it in, 33mm, 35mm print?
70, I think. Was it
70, 35?
35. I don't remember.
Might have been 70. Might have been 70. Maybe. Sounds about right. We went to go see it, and yeah, click on it. And then
So, like, watching that, I really love the dialogue and how cool it was. I liked a lot of this work overall so far. But this movie I've been looking forward to as well, because I was looking for a Jackie Brown kind of thing. And I'm not going to lie, leaving this movie the first time, I didn't feel like it wowed me enough. And I didn't know enough about Marilyn Manson stuff. I knew enough to get by. That's cool.
Charles Manson.
I always confuse them,
too. Okay.
I'm sure a lot of people do it, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Marilyn Manson. I know you have a rib that got removed, and you can do whatever you want with that. but that being said,
he can suck his own dick.
That's what I was alluding to. Yeah. You didn't have to say it. That being said, the Charlie Manson thing. But watching this a second time and actually just kind of letting it mellow into it really grew to me. And like you said earlier, Brad Pitt's performance is amazing in this. And I've read and heard a couple things also about how, like, it's kind of biased towards, because it is, it's towards the Hollywood, but it's the Hollywood system and the studio system and how basically ingrained they made themselves to the American public. Without the Hollywood system, without the Hollywood studio system, really, you don't get what all these shows and everybody watching all these shows, everybody from the evilest of evil person to the nicest of nicest, right, yeah, are watching the same shows.
Yeah.
You know? And
no, there's only six channels or something.
Yeah. Right, but without them making that and kind of like forcing and is what it is now for movies, where we get a shit ton and shows and everything, the where we are now, what Hollywood did for that, I guess we consider that golden age because everybody was watching everything, as limited as it was.
Yeah.
But that being said, like you said, with the characters and watching these two flawed characters, but getting not enough from one character, but Justin also, like, everything you see from the movie is kind of like he's earning our trust in it, which is what's his name, character, the Brad Pitt's character in the movie, Cliff Booth, because you hear bad things about him killing his wife, and I'm not really spoiling anything, right? But that's a bad annotation, and people in the movie hate him for that. And the only one who likes him, you could almost say, almost keeps him around, just Leonardo DiCaprio.
It's almost like he's exploiting Cliff Booth for keeping him in the system, so to speak, right? You know, he's his driver and all this stuff. But at the same time, he's like paying him to be his friend.
Yeah.
Because he likes being friends with him.
Yeah, he does.
Like, they're buddies.
Right.
Also.
It's a good way of having it where he can have his cake and eat it too, where he can explain to somebody that, oh, well, he's just my employee. But
he carries my load.
But he carries my load. Exactly. Very much right. So. At the beginning of the movie, hilarious. Yeah. But at the same time, also, it could be where he really does like him as a friend. And that shows later on in the movie, right? That he is a very close friend of his. If anything, definitely, probably his only friend.
Yeah, I would say so for sure.
So you can go along those lines. And Cliff Booth knows that. That's the best part. But he's winning the audience over with everything that he does. That's what we get more
swagger,
Brad Pitt.
Right?
And that swagger is amazing. But
the way he gets on top of that roof.
Oh,
the way he drives, I can see a background, just like, you know how people have sites or your Apple TV, when it goes to rest mode, it has those pictures, right? I could just see him driving and playing music. I could just be that.
Very much so, right. Yes. Just watching that and seeing all this thing, and then, like you said, this is this great thing that I love about the movie. The movie holds back from this violence and thing that it wants to, that we know and expect of Quentin Tarantino. But he held it back. He's like holding these dogs back the whole movie, right?
It's like he's holding back his childishness.
But it's great because it lets these characters do amazingness and then even more amazingness to this when the violence does come out.
Yeah.
So it works out really, really well. And it's just like you said, it is perfect of Hollywood's, like, just like that influencing it, you know. It's great how they're so big, though. Also, like, it was Hollywood was getting so big where those murders that actually happened in real life would have, you know, how it starts jading what, you know, how actors and the things do or whatever, and how Hollywood takes it and how people portray them, you know, whatever. And now they have to be more secluded or whatever the case has to be, and now it works to where, oh well, we're good, you know, kind of in its own, in this world, and whatever happens. And it is really cool to watch this. And I know it's dialogue heavy, but there's a lot of cool scenes in this where you're seeing this just fucking, like I said, amazing character development, especially with Leonardo DiCaprio's. Leonardo DiCaprio's role, he develops with a little girl. Like, yeah. Like his character development is there, and it's fucking spot on. And watching those scenes, very powerful scenes.
I love that. He's so insecure. He has that like stutter
that
a little
says,
bit.
That says a lot about performs that says scene. A lot about like just I think Hollywood like, actors in general, yeah. How what we or at least what we think of they are, and
well,
what we've
at
been
least
told.
What Tarantino scene, or
right?
Something
and exactly right, yeah. And then what we've been told also from many times of people how they
definitely.
Were. So yeah, it is super cool. And then like you said earlier. Even if you could be a great actor and put in all the effort and do all this stuff, it does still take a little bit of luck to make it that much, that extra step definitely. To be even better. So, yeah, this is a really great movie. I, hands down, really did enjoy it. I enjoyed it the first time. Way enjoyed it more the second time. And I'm glad I did watch it that second time because it might have been, like, shorter in my list, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I got the Blu-ray if you ever wanted.
Oh, cool.
And I got the digital copy of it, too.
Of course, yeah. So. Cool. Even better.
One quick thing about QT here is that I think QT works really well for us, Ralph, particularly us, because the age bracket that we're in is that it really has that sweet tonal spot for people our age.
I would say so. He started in the mid to late 80s. Am I correct?
No, early 90s.
It was early 90s? I thought he started late 80s.
Reservoir Dogs was like 92.
What was True Romance?
True Romance came out in like
91?
91 maybe. Or maybe it was Reservoir Dogs and then True Romance 92.
I think
94 was
Pulp
Fiction.
I think he just wrote that, so.
Yeah, he just wrote it, yeah. And then,
which is why it's one of my favorite
Pulp Fiction came out in 94.
Yeah.
And then 96.
We do fit perfectly for this genre.
Was Jackie Brown.
Right, yeah. We do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then we started genre mashing with Kill Bills, you know, samurai and western, right? Yeah. And then you see, you know, Death Proof Experiment, which is probably his, give or take, I mean, that's just like a weird movie, but it's like a off movie maybe. He doesn't count as one of his own movies, actually.
No, he really doesn't, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, he's just, he'll always be on my short list. I love all his movies. I really do. Like,
you know, and it's crazy, he's an offshoot of Hollywood person, but at the same time, not really, he's what we want from Hollywood. He is a Scorsese. He is where they make their own roles. They make everything.
Yeah.
You know, he is a, what's his name? I can't even think. Steven Spielberg. They're the influencers. They're the ones, you know, you say a name.
Yeah.
He's
a household name.
He's a household name, very much so. And he's proved to that, I mean, in the last three decades, right?
Definitely.
So, and that's not a small feat, you know? Because you can,
he's also a staunch supporter of film stock, filming on.
Yeah,
film.
Very much so. Yeah, and I think it's it didn't really start getting pronounced until he was about after Kill Bill's around Django times. I think that's when he started really just getting this gigantic. Now he's in this broader spectrum of the world, not just film people, cinema people. And now it's really, really big people. People like your regular average shows are coming up to me like, oh yeah, I saw Pulp Fiction, but I never knew that was him, or I didn't care to know it was him.
Yeah.
Or I saw Kill Bill, you know, or whatever. You're like, oh, okay. I never cared also, even though it's everywhere. He's Quentin Tarantino's everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But, and you're like, oh yeah, Django. And you're like, well, that brings a whole new audience, right?
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow. And then, you know, now he's this different spectrum, and you go back to his work, and you're like, well, he's just been doing great movies all the time. Yes, he has.
Yes, he has. Very stylish guy. So that's your number, was it five?
Five.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. My number four is my second foreign picture from Mexico. It's called Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Oh, yeah, I remember this one.
A dark fairy tale about a gang of five children trying to survive the horrific violence of the cartels and the ghosts created every day by the drug war. And this is a film primarily starring children, only like four or five, six children. Paula Lera, Juan Ramon Lopez, Neri Arendondo, Hansel Casillas, written and directed by Isa Lopez. And I don't know, Isa sounds like a guy name, but it could be a girl name. Not 100%. Because it could be short for something like that. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know every name. Yeah, so this is a movie that it's exclusive to Shudder. Those who have Shudder, the streaming horror site, can see this movie in America. That's the only way you can see it, unless you pirate it. And it is a movie set present day in the slums of some slum part of, I think, Mexico City. And it is both exclusively about the drug war, but it isn't. It's about trauma. And it's about how this little girl, it starts off with this little girl like getting herself involved with this gang of other kids who are orphaned by the drug war, either for, you know, reasons that their parents deserved or more than likely really didn't deserve, you know, just in the way of this onslaught of revolving, like droves of drug cartels who have a blank check to do whatever they want. And you see that in the very opening, actually starts off with the boy, with the leader of this, the boy leader of this group, of this gang of kids. And the little girl's mom gets kidnapped, presumed dead, in the beginning of the movie, like a little after the intro. And she gets herself involved with them. And the movie has a, I want to say, a Pan's Labyrinth quality or tone or like feel to it. There's other movies like this too, by the way, where they introduce her like a magical realism in the movie, true or not true, kind of like Pan's Labyrinth. It could be true or it could not be true, but it's her point of view, and it lets her to do these amazing things or let amazing things happen around her that, you know, otherwise are impossible to get to because they're just children walking around this, you know, they have to worry about where they're going to sleep, what they're going to eat, all that stuff. It's a really hard movie to watch because you see kids dying. It's in horrible situations. Now it does have some light humor in it because they're kids and they have to cope. You see these children cope, and the only way children can, that's dancing, that's making fun of each other, that's, but they are always reminded at the same time. And the ghosts of their, of every loved one they've seen die or known died or not loved ones, maybe the perpetrators who killed them, are always chasing them, and sometimes ghostly, surreal ways, and other times in ways that are just too real. So this movie is really a gut punch, and it's totally worked out for me. It's Tigers Are Not Afraid on Shudder.
Nice.
Check that out.
Wow. More of an impact than I thought it would.
That's probably the most indiest movie on here, probably.
Probably. I would say
yeah.
so.
Yeah. It's my number four.
Cool. That's cool, man. Mm. I definitely know. Definitely need to watch it now.
For yes. Sure. Yes. Watch it.
Okay.
Cool. Watch it and get scared.
Did you say get scared?
Yes.
No, please no.
What's your number three or four? No, four. You're doing four.
Four. My number four is a movie that I saw with you, Oscar, later on in the year, and I was very surprised it was still in the theaters, and this is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Ooh. And I've always loved Mr. Rogers, let's be realistic.
Yes.
Hard not to. And it's based on a true story of a real-life friendship between Fred Rogers and journalist Tom Junod, but that's not his name in the movie. They call him Lloyd Vogel. Anyways, this is directed by Marielle Heller, mm-hmm. and written by Tom Junod and
Definitely a short lister right here. Short list. My 11 through 20, isn't this?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was, I liked the whole concept of the movie, and I was really curious as to what this movie was going to do, because this documentary that came out the year before, was Once You Be My Neighbor, yeah. was just a knockout ballpark, you know, fucking home run right away.
Feels, man.
I mean, the feels, the everything, right?
Yeah. And, definitely.
And then watching this movie, and I was like, what are you going to do? Guys, I'm sure you're watching this movie, and then you're gonna be like, what can we do, right? Yeah. This movie just did everything for that we want to do, right? And then I know Tom Hanks is attached to this, so that's America's father, right? If you want to look at him or whatever.
And also his persona as an actor kind of leads him as a Mr. Rogers version of acting.
Yeah, I would say
so. He's a very nice guy. No one says anything negative about him.
No scandals
with that guy.
Exactly, yeah, very much so.
Right? No history of alcohol. Like, well, I mean, I don't know what the reality is, but that's how we see him.
You can almost say that, very much so, yes. People look up to him also.
And definitely.
Roles and stuff like that, and that he's done, and things like that. And he came from comedy, remember that, guys? So this movie, I was very interested, and I really did like this just long episode, an in-depth adult version mm-hmm. of an episode that we Definitely. Get. That worked out really well. I know we liked all the little cutscenes in between, how they travel through the world.
Yeah, the miniature Pennsylvania, miniature New York.
Right, very much so, yes. But I like that it all stemmed from just a man who didn't really have to do anything, because I think where a lot of us are in this position, a lot of times, where we're not connected in any way to do anything but we go out of our way. And Fred, in this movie, Mr. Rogers, goes out of his way to ensure, like, this person is getting the proper attention/help/whatever he needs to kind of just progress in his life, something that's holding him down, clearly something, whatever, right? And it's something to basically have him forgive his father, right? That's the big thing, is forgive your father for the things that he did to you, because it's just holding you down in the end. Obviously, he doesn't see it that way, right?
Yeah.
But it is. It clearly is, right?
It's very comfortable. He's very comfortable holding on to that rage.
Yeah, he's very comfortable holding on to that rage. Yeah, it's just, he doesn't know anything else.
That's true.
So to see that, and it's but it all stems from what can be just a stranger, a simple thing of, you know, and I know it's weird to say that Mr. Rogers is a stranger because everyone knows him, but at the same time,
yeah, right.
Right. So at the same time, it is a stranger because they don't know each other, you know, personally. But to somebody to just take the time out of their day, and especially leading a busy life like Mr. Rogers' character does, which he does lead a busy life, right? And you see his life, what he does, and it doesn't seem like it's very busy, because he'll shoot something and be like, that's it, we're done, have a great day, right?
Yeah.
But it also spent like 3 hours before working with paraplegic kids, and you're just like, oh shit, right?
Yeah.
It's a very impactful.
I like how he really commands the presence in every room he walks in by just being quiet and patient. Yeah. It's just a strange way.
It is, but at the same time, it's very, it's like he's like very humble, a very humbling person.
I like the idea that he, you know, something he has to work on every single day to achieve this.
And that's,
kind of thing.
And that's, you know what? And that's very human.
It doesn't just come to it.
He's not born this way. Yeah, right, exactly. And it's not human, right? It's not human. It's very human for you to hear that, see that, and then the people closest to him obviously are the ones who see that the most, but the fact that you can understand that he works at it, he does all this stuff, and the people very close to him, like his wife, his kids who aren't shown in the movie, but at the same time as his producer, his main manager, right, whoever that person is, they know them so well.
Mr. Mars.
Yes, Mr. Mars, that's right. Excuse me. Mr. Mars, yeah. I don't know. It did a lot for a character that you almost didn't even need to do anymore for Mr. Rogers, but I think it did a really good job of showing what his impact and how he impacted people in like an episode, or how just him taking out the time of his day to make a friend or to do this or to do that, it says a lot. And it, you know, and I think overall his doing that inspires, or should at least inspire you to just do a little bit better, or at least try to do better as a human being, just in everyday life. And it's a small thing that you say, but you know, it's something that you have to work hard at. Even a guy like Fred Rogers, who you may have seen could have been like a saint, never would consider himself one, for the fact that he's a man with flaws, and he's a man with he's not perfect, and he knows that, and he knows that it's not something that can not be, what he says it in the movie, saying would be that you're as close to God, or you're as close to being perfect, or whatever, and he's like, I'm not that, I'm somebody who worked hard to be here, you know, and it's not an unachievable goal. And that's a huge thing to say to somebody. It's not unachievable to say that, well, I've made it here through my struggles, through my things, and I'm nowhere near as a perfect image of God, or whatever you want to say, or this thing that's impossible to get to. Quite the contrary, I work very hard to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it means that you have to work hard to do this.
Yeah, he set the bar on working on yourself.
Yeah. Very much so.
You know what I mean? Like, it's really hard to track that.
I just love the messaging overall. And I think overall Tom Hanks did a really great job in the movie. But I think it's overall what the movie does message-wise that the movie, that's why the movie's really high up there for me.
Totally.
Cool. So that's my number four.
That's your number four. Now we're into the home stretch. Our final three. My number three, these are the top three that are, I knew were my top three for a while, and at one point they were mixed around a little bit.
Let's see if we have any of the same.
My number three is Knives Out.
Knives
Out.
Oh, wow.
When renowned crime novelist Harlan Trombe is found dead at his estate just after his 85th birthday, the inquisitive and debonair detective Benoit Blanc, I can't fucking do French names, is mysteriously enlisted to investigate. From Harlan's dysfunctional family to his devoted staff, Blanc sifts through a web of red herrings and self-serving lies to uncover the truth behind Harlan's untimely death. This film is written and directed by one Rian Johnson, Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, Jamie Lee Curtis. A lot of people in this fucking movie. Great cast.
It's a short list for me. That's a good movie.
Knives Out is a return to form. And well, not, I don't want to say return to form because Rian Johnson has always been in this. I mean, he's always very good in his writing and the way he explores a genre or, so, or something like that. Even The Last Jedi, which is, for me, a really good movie. But I think I haven't loved a movie of his since Brick until Knives Out. I think Knives Out and Brick were very similar movies in both murder mysteries and in a way, except that they're both different kinds of backgrounds.
Okay, yeah.
I think that he is really, really good in this movie. There's absolutely no fat to trim on this movie. And the movie has, on top of everything, which meaning the great dialogue, the snappy dialogue too, not to mention the snappy dialogue, the amazing acting that these actors are able to convey for his thing, and that the setting, the clue board setting that is on, all that stuff, it's like, that's besides the point, the fact that he is manages to touch and relate. He not forces you, but he invites you, and then you find yourself completely empathetic to a person's viewpoint, and that is the maid Martha in the movie, who becomes like the main actor in the movie, and her point of view in this movie as she traverses through these people who are much more privileged, much more I don't want to say emotional, but much more, you know, ingrained in their misguided standpoints and viewpoints in this movie. The way the movie shows all that with this murder mystery setting. Uh-huh. And also, and as a matter of fact, Rian Johnson sets out to actually disturb the traditional murder mystery setting by giving you the answer, like in the first act, of what happened to this guy, and then saying, like, it becomes like an Alfred Hitchcock movie of getting out of something, and then it turns back into that murder mystery again, into how, who laid what down in the path that led to this man's death in the end. It's such a great fucking story. It's such a great fucking written story. This must have been a great screenplay to write. I want to read it so bad. And I think that a lot of stuff in this movie, when you think of the privilege or the elitism, the racism that's in this movie, like, it's subtle and funny, and it uses it in different ways that are, that isn't like preaching to you whatsoever, that you can actually see yourself making that joke even, but like not realizing that the context of how it brings it up in the movie is what you should be paying attention to. And there's so much more to it. Well, obviously, I'm not saying spoilers. I'm being very vague here. And check out our review, though. We talked about it, spoilers there. Such a great movie. Knives Out is genuinely an amazing film that I really like a lot. It's Knives Out is great. So that's my number three.
Very well done.
All the knives. I love seeing Chris Evans be an asshole. It's great. he's too good as Captain America. He's just always too good.
Yeah, he was.
What's your number?
My number three is a movie.
Great sound.
Thanks. My number three is a movie that that I guess it's for the first time we would do it, I would say, and it brings up old world stuff, or older world stuff, and is The Irishman. So I bring it up as the first thing that does the first time it does it, as in, like, you bring in these, not the first people to bring organized crime or the mob or whatever, but it's about the people from the good old days that everybody talks about in all the current or anything modern times, crimes or even 80s to whatever, anything, all the stuff before the 80s. That's what I'm talking about, right? It's all those people that started, that kind of made everything for the 80s people and 70s and 60s, all those people. That's the original OG people, I guess, right? Or ORG, if you want
to. Older G?
OR, yeah, G, whatever the one you want to call it. So yeah, this is an epic movie that there's a lot of things going on in this movie, but that overall you're watching kind of two movies here. At least that's how I took it, and to see it, and I'll tell you right now, the technology that we're in to de-age a lot of these actors, phenomenal. because for the most part, I had zero to very little issue with any of the people seeing the de-aging on them, which worked out really well, which I think we talked about in our review.
I think so.
Yeah, but I had loads of fun watching this movie and kind of getting a quick history lesson with the Jimmy Hoffa stuff. But the first half of the movie being this like nitty-gritty kind of organized crime and how what the dealings is and how things work. And it's very still like a more of a respect kind of thing. But I think we get that in any mobster movie that we've seen. But this is very still, it's almost like your word is bond, very much so. This is kind of like, you know, don't you, when you say, don't you know who I, you don't have to say that. You say that like the people in the next say, don't you know who I am? Because all these other people earn that respect or earn that everything else from that, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, they're the ones who allow you to get that. Don't you know who I am? Don't you know where I come from? Kind of thing. That's when you get to see that, you know, because of these people who started off everything for them or laid the groundwork for them, should I say. And then the movie does this crazy transition into Jimmy Hoffa and doing this whole thing about more like big picture, big world picture things and how actual influential the mob was, not just starting in Vegas and stuff like that, or not just in their own towns or not just in this, but how they potentially, you know, without loosely saying it, without actually saying it, should I say loosely saying it, is how they influence campaigns because they're the ones with the money. You're talking about actual cash, you know, that you need now. You come to people that you can owe a favor to. And then so, because we actually have the liquid cash, which is having it through the unions and having it through people who actually worked hard to make all this money, earn this money, but using it, you know, however banks move money. Everybody does it. I know it sounds shady, but corporations do it to you now. They hedge their bets on stuff like that now, so it's not like the banks do that to you now. Banks play with your money all the time.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Like, it's your money, sure, but that's why they play with it. And then they're like, oh, okay, cool, yeah, we'll give it back to you. Yeah. You know, it is what it is. But
and you look at your money like, oh, it looks used.
Yeah. It could be. Yeah, some blood. But seeing this whole thing and how the connections is and kind of like little sprinkles of there, they, you know, they kind of touch on it. They don't really go too much into it, but it is obviously something that they obviously were influenced in. And that's how, like, almost like the pinnacle of how the reach that they had and kind of starting to see the downfall and the change and stuff like that in the movie. Like I said, the movie transcends so many times and stuff like that. That I thought was just really well done. And to see De Niro play, I guess, a role that it's a similar role that you've seen him play it, but it's not a role of, he gains that power. He gains that respect. He gains that trust as an Irishman, as the Irishman in the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to somebody who's already had it or somebody who kind of just like grows up into it or whatever the case was. In other roles that you've seen De Niro in, and especially somebody who has so much clout with just going back and doing a movie to do it like this as well, to start from the bottom of nothing and come up. Says a lot for De Niro, says a lot for just character, you know, being able to develop a character like that. And then Joe Pesci, kind of the opposite, which is somebody who's always worked to move up, but he's already the guy in charge.
He's the guy.
Which is really cool. It's a really cool little head turner there. But I really did enjoy this movie a lot. And it was, I thought it was just really well made. And as much as you can say what influences with the whole thing with what happened, I like that what Martin Scorsese does in this film is that what he decides is, this is his decision. He doesn't like to back out of anything. And he decides that if this is the decision of what he thinks happened or whatever events is, because obviously everything is fictional until it isn't or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's based off some sort of memoir.
Memoir or something like that, right? Guy, but at the same time, like, he puts in his own thing, right?
Yeah.
And that's his, what he thinks on it. And I like that the movie sticks to it and they don't back out. They don't just kind of mention it or sway from it. No, it's his thing and it is what it is.
Yeah.
And I've always appreciated that from when he does something like that. So that thing worked out really well. So I thought
more. It's great that it's your number three because it's my number two.
Oh,
and
perfect.
I'll just go right into it right here. And my number two is The Irishman as well. And it's, I see Robert De Niro's, like, there's some acting, like, things here, particularly with his daughter, in relation to his daughter, who is, a lot of people call it, and I didn't put it two and two together. I was really close to it until I heard it in some other review or podcast or read it somewhere where they mentioned his daughter in the movie is the eyes of God. Seeing him and so like,
oh,
I didn't
man.
Think of that until I'm like I was so close to it because I'm like she is like an ethereal creature. She is the judgment of him, and I just called it that. But I didn't call it, God is a perfect example.
Yeah,
and that's what she is. And then the scenes revolving around her daughter, particularly towards the end, right before she stopped talking to him, and like we see Robert De Niro really, really fucking acting, really fucking. I haven't yeah. seen that kind of acting in him yeah. since Raging Bull or something. Like it's been, and that's a kind of different acting, mind you. But, and you just see Joe Pesci, the understatedly perfect Joe Pesci. And I wonder what Scorsese said. I don't know how he gets all these actors who come out of retirement, like Daniel Day-Lewis and right. stuff, for example, to like fucking act with him. But he has something. He, and Joe Pesci, brings back a really fucking, really amazing nuance to this fucking role. Like he commands so much without saying a single thing, and you know there's just scenes where he doesn't say a single word, and those are his best scenes because of his presence in the room. You can feel it in your own room as you're watching the television, and it's that's really great. And also I think this movie is like, kind of, you mentioned it earlier how it's like two movies. I legit think it is like two movies. Like the first half of the movie is, and that thing is one setup. It is a big setup, but it isn't meant to be a setup because it's world building, it's character building, it's showing you the colors of everything first. And, you know, much like a lot of Scorsese movies where they delve into what these people did on a regular basis, where they worked out of, how their family life was generally like. You think a lot of old-timer, maybe even old-timer Italian families, you know, the man provides, doesn't really talk much, you know, things like that, and kind of focuses on work to provide for the family. That's like number one and number two, number three priority, and then number four is maybe talk to the children later on, or whatever. And then, but the movie turns really amazing in the last hour and a half, where they introduce this huge plot that happens concerning Al Pacino's character, Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah.
And the things that happened around Jimmy Hoffa and on him, basically at the from the ceremony
oh, yeah. Yeah.
scene onward, the movie turns it up like three more notches of amazingness, really, for me. And it turns into like a great fucking editing piece. It turns into some great fucking writing. Steve Zaling, who wrote the screenplay from it. I don't know what the fuck he tapped into later on in that script, but it really worked out. And Scorsese knew how to handle it, and as well as the performances, of course. And at least to that ending, that just like it's heartbrokenly fitting, you know, for the movie. So yeah, I totally loved it. I agree with everything you said.
Great.
The Irishman, my number two. That was hard too. I couldn't decide where to put him.
Yeah,
for Knives Out and an Irishman.
Oh, I hear
but
you.
For me, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So my top three are like basically indistinguishable.
Right.
They're there. They're in an order. I just put them in an order yeah. of how I felt and that I didn't want to change it. And that's it.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that.
So what's your number two?
My number two is The Joker, or just Joker.
Oh, Joker. Yeah.
But it's this is one hell of a ride. We'll talk about acting. Joaquin Phoenix, and I know we've tooted his horn for many years, at least us.
Definitely.
Just the amount of performance he can do. I think I've noticed it ever since Her, maybe before that. I'm sure before that, but Walk the Line and stuff like that. But I know Her was this gigantic movie that I saw with him, and I was just like, this is just acting chops, the master, stuff like that. Robert De Niro is also in this movie, go figure. But this is a movie written by and directed by Todd Phillips, a couple other people as well. Yeah, Joker was just a crazy, kind of fucked up, wonderful, almost masterpiece of a movie of seeing this.
Another very big privilege.
Yeah, I would
class
say. Yeah, very much so, yeah. And you're seeing it from the bottom up, right?
Definitely.
And you see how the man just gets, how much a man gets shat on, and well, how much more can you expect of a man? What do you expect to do? What is society, you know? And brings up so many things to a character that you never even thought to bring up to, that's kind of like evolved throughout the years of what I've known as the original Joker, to not way, way back from original show The Batman, right? But from the Batman movie from back in the 80s to now, and the different type of Joker that we have, and how we get this history now, or whatever we consider giving yeah. us history of his past, and seeing how a man is
a broken man already, trying to get help and trying to make by, can't even do that, or can't even get the help and get shat on at every turn, and you know what you expect out of that person and what we as a society say. I mean, and then just to see this guy act his ass off in it and then play it off and then sell it to you, and then what he, you know, he doesn't know better, and then but you don't know better either because you don't know what the hell's wrong with him. Is it a schizophrenia? Like, there's so much going on in this movie. That's really cool. And then at one point, you kind of, not at one point, but at several points in the movie, I think you don't know if you're seeing what you're seeing or if it's what he's seeing in his head and it's just played out because that's what he's seeing now, or is it actually happening in the movie? And that says a lot also in that movie. So a lot of crazy stuff going on here about mental disorder, like you said, classism as well, and how, you know, the top get everything they want and it works out for them with tax brackets and whatever the case is, and they get the nice stuff, and meanwhile this guy can't even get public aid, you know, to for the things that he needs the most, that the state themselves said that he needs the most, and now you don't even give it to him.
Yeah, I'm glad this movie spoke to you. I wish it did for me.
Yeah, no, it did. Really,
I'm so glad it worked because I know it spoke to a lot of people.
No, it did speak for me a lot. And just seeing it, because I mean, I feel like we all feel like Joaquin Phoenix is like the Joker, or Joker in the movie, at the beginning of the movie. What's his name in the movie? Jesus, I already forgot. What's his name in the movie?
Arthur.
Arthur. I think we all feel like Arthur, I think, when we get shat on, when nothing comes our way. And I think that's basically middle to lower class, anybody in mid lower class. Hell, any middle class, not even mid upper class, all those people have been shat on at one point.
Yeah.
We've all been there. And, you know, obviously, just some of us have been lucky to get out of it, and just happens that he wasn't lucky. He's not.
Well, have a good support system. This guy doesn't.
Right, or have a good support system. It's just everything. Everything was just bound to not happen to him, and it just happens at the wrong times. You know, also in the world's America's probably shittiest city. Right, go figure.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And then I don't know. It was a really cool movie. I really liked the ending a lot because just how he turns into this. How even he doesn't see it at first until he realizes what an entity kind of he's become, or the kind of movement that he's inspired. Very similar to Queen and Slim. The difference is he embraces it and they don't.
Yeah.
In a very big way. And he kind of...
He runs towards the fire.
He runs towards the fire, very much so, right? And because of that, I think it shows all this craziness going on. I don't know. It just really worked out. I had a lot of fun watching the movie in a weird way.
I think the movie was really super interesting to discuss, for sure. I enjoyed it for that.
That's for sure, yeah. And
I like the stairway dancing.
Yeah. That was dope, yeah. And there's a lot of cool stuff in the movie that you can say, like I said, but it kind of leaves you in a little mind fuck. But the fact that it has so much to talk about from a character that I know there was to talk about, but to bring that out, especially out of a character like DC, and it's sad to say that DC can only do good with Batman stuff, like Batman movies and Joker movies. Or that's not good, but great, I guess, because some stuff is good, just not great. Yeah. And this happens to be falling the great. Yeah. So
I hear you.
But yeah, that's Joker. That's number two for me. Joaquin Phoenix knocks it out of the park. I mean, he should be nominated.
Definitely,
for
he's good. He's
anything. I mean, that's standout. I think without him, the movie's probably not subpar, but
you need him.
You need him. You need somebody like him.
Like all these other movies, you think of Irishman or Knives Out.
And even, I can't think of anybody else. Yeah.
But this guy just...
Yeah, and I can't think of anything else for him. So anybody else but him, should I say. And it's really weird to say that, considering we've had many different Jokers.
Definitely.
But I don't know who would have sold that as an actor.
He's the fourth major Joker.
Major Joker, yeah.
If you don't count West.
Adam West stuff?
No, I wasn't thinking... No, I was. I don't know why I said Adam West as Batman. I was thinking of Mark Hamill doing his voice work too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of different
voice actors, stuff like that. Yeah.
All right. Want to guess my number one? I mean, you're pretty good. I'm pretty sure you can guess.
I know it. You told me. It's Parasite.
Yeah, I did tell you that one day, didn't I?
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay. My number one is Parasite.
I never had to guess it. I just knew it.
Would you have guessed it anyway?
Yeah, I would have guessed Parasite anyway.
Yeah, I want to try guess yours after. Jobless, penniless, and above all, hopeless. The unmotivated patriarchy tech and his equally unambitious family, his supportive wife, Chun-suk, his cynical 20-something daughter, Ki-young, and his college-age son, Ki-woo, occupy themselves by working for peanuts in their squalid basement-level apartment. Then, by sheer luck, a lucrative business proposition will pave the way for an insidiously subtle scheme as Ki-woo summons up the courage to pose as an English tutor for the teenage daughter of an affluent Park family. Now the stage seems set for an unceasing winner-takes-all class war. How does one get rid of a parasite? I like that one particularly. Someone wrote it.
Yeah.
But this is a film written and directed by Bong Joon-ho, the man who brought us some really amazing movies, particularly Mother, Memories of Murder. Memories of Murder, so fucking good. The Host, so fucking good. His like version of a monster movie set in the city.
Yeah.
It's all these fucking movies are really good. Now, his last two, not as good. He kind of forays away from Korea. He did two movies, one in America, Snowpiercer, and Okja, which I think is a collaboration of different places, but might be just American, but it was a Netflix original movie. And I like those movies. Don't get me wrong. They're fun to watch, and I rewatched like both a piece.
I thought Snowpiercer was a good movie.
Yeah, Snowpiercer was fun, but it wasn't like whatever. And he's really honed in this ability. He is the only one with the maturity, the tech, and the smarts to do this thing that he's always been doing in movies, where he has his ability to switch genres like that. He
I
does
you
it.
Saying, yeah.
He will drop a line that will make you laugh. That followed a very gruesome scene that lets you feel the gruesomeness of that scene, and then takes a power away by instantly making you feel like you're in a different movie. And it's all within the same scene. Now, mind you, that power is really, really fortified and seen a lot better and clearer and yet more subtle in Parasite. Now, a movie like Snowpiercer or like Memories of Murder, he uses archetypes to do those things. And those movies are amazing for those reasons. But like in Parasite, it comes off so naturally unnatural. It's kind of hard to explain.
Uh-huh.
You have to see the movie to know what I'm talking about. That this is the movie to watch if you're on either side of whatever you think there might be of a class war. And there is a class dividing, for sure. There's a lot of symbolism, a lot of imagery, a lot of visuals that help depict, very subtly and unsubtly, how separate these two people are. Like the Park family, the rich family that they're, you know, conning, this family's conning them. They live, like, up on a hill. When the rain hits, you know, the rain just washes past them. And these guys live in a basement-level apartment below all that. And you just see the differences without the movie telling you, saying it with words, you know. And it's just one of many thousands of things in this movie. And the way it leads to the ending and the... It's so fucking... It also taps into a lot of, like, other films that it kind of sparks about, that it takes thematically. And... this movie just works so goddamn well, and the acting is obviously amazing. And it goes to strange places like all his movies do, but strange places that are not unavoidable, kind of way to say it.
Okay.
And it's such a fucking amazing movie. This is my number 0 and 1 and negative 1. That's how it was my number 1 the second I saw it. And I will see it again, too, for sure. And Bong Joon-ho is at his greatest. He's using all his tools and all whatever he perfected over the years to finally make the movie for it. Because all his movies have been about class separation, too. Memories of Murder is the same thing. Like the bumbling cops and, you know, how they live in squalor. And the people who are, you know, yelling at him to solve this case of this murder. And you think of Mother and the way his son is portrayed because he's in the poor side of the town. And he's done this all the time. The Host, the family's all poor people.
Yep.
And the way they have to cope with everything, they have to struggle just to get anything done, the daily thing done. So when the monster hits, you know, it's a different story. So like, he's been doing all this stuff. Snowpiercer is the king of that. I mean, the whole movie is about literally the poor people in the back of the train versus the rich people in the front of the train.
Very much so, yeah.
So, like, yeah, he has perfected whatever he's done to get to this movie. And Parasite is a fucking amazing end to the year. Decade, also. So, yeah, Parasite, number 1.
Yeah, 송아 저거 봐 저거 봐 우리 짜파구리 먹자 짜파구리
Nice.
I'm gonna guess yours.
You can.
I think it's Uncut Gems, but I don't. That's what I'm gonna go with.
You're gonna go with Uncut Gems?
Did you? You didn't say it earlier, right?
No, I don't think so.
I think I'm gonna go with that, but I don't know. Is okay. it?
Yeah, it would.
Is be it Uncut really? Gems, yeah. Uncut Gems. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And I hate to say it because I've probably complained about Adam Sandler my whole life and his work.
Me too.
And listen. Because everybody defends Adam Sandler, and I go, oh, okay, cool, name me a movie. And then everyone goes, oh, well, Happy, nope, can't name that one. That was like 20 years ago. Name me something that he's done currently that's good. Mm-hmm. And they're like, 50 First Dates? That was like 10 years ago. Name me something that he's done currently. Hmm. And no one can defend him. And I go, that's exactly right, because he sucks, right?
I was never just Punch Drunk Love, that's it.
But I say that, but that was over 10 years ago, too.
Well, I mean, I'm saying in all his career, I don't really like the. I mean, he's fine in the
What's
movies,
funny is,
but he's
right?
Not like,
no, I'm saying I get that.
And Happy Madison.
What I'm saying is, like, I just never really. I get it. I get people love Adam Sandler, but for like the wrong reasons. I don't know why.
Maybe
people love him for random things. It is. It's really weird. It's a really weird guy to love, like his work, because his work's kind of all over the place. Also, so it's really weird to say that. Don't get me wrong. He's had good movies, Click and stuff like that. I guess it worked out.
Oh, no. He's had success.
Yeah. Of course,
he's
had success.
He made like 3 Netflix movies a year.
No. I 100% agree with that. But I never thought I would say that an Adam Sandler movie would be in my top anything. Or at least top 5, top 3.
Number one. Right?
Sure.
And since the end of a decade, he's the number one of the... No,
Not true. That being said, powerful performance, because it's all relies on him being this snively character that bothered me to my core. Sweet Jesus. But let me read the description real quick, because I should do this movie at least somewhat justice. A charismatic New York City jeweler, always on the lookout for the next big score, makes a series of high-stakes bets that could lead to the windfall of a lifetime. Howard must perform a precarious high-wire act, balancing business, family, and encroaching adversaries on all sides in his relentless pursuit of the ultimate win. This man is all about gambling. And what's funny is that, go figure, it shouldn't be too surprising that Uncut Gems is my favorite movie because it's about sports, right? It's about basketball. Yeah. I don't watch basketball that much, but it is what it is. But it's about betting in sports and gambling and stuff like that. And it's about a man who just doesn't know how to say no to gambling. He's just so addicted. He's that guy, the reason that there's a phone number you should call because you're an addict to gambling. And you really should. And you really, really should seek help because it's affecting everything in your life. And everything. And all aspects of his life. Like, every aspect of his life.
You know, you ever see that movie about... addiction, or I mean, this movie isn't about addiction. It's about a guy who's addicted. This is a different story.
Different story.
But like the movie isn't about addiction. But you see a movie about addiction and how, you know, generally they start off with how it starts, leading to that one decision, the rock bottom decision, or the one decision that gets them right before the rock bottom decision, so they can get out of it to redeem the character. It's like he's like a month past that when the movie starts. You know,
yeah, he's like, I think further than that, but yeah,
right, you know, like
you do catch him in the scenario where he's already like way too in it already.
Yeah, mob,
right,
and
mob, and everything else,
bets.
And yeah, it's unreal, and it's crazy because he actually makes money. He's just spending so much of it, he doesn't have enough to keep him afloat, liquidation wise. Anyways, he'd have to sell all his assets to like pay off his actual debts that he owes. It's unreal, but that's besides the point. To watch Adam Sandler in this movie. Just go around New York, and it feels like a small city, but I know it's not. It's just centralized in the locations that they're going, because he walks around a lot to places.
Definitely.
And to see him do all these things, and it's obviously takes place in earlier 2000s, right? So there's cell phone does exist, the smartphone does exist, they are taking pictures. Not necessarily smartphone, I guess. It's like Razor's time, I guess, still, right? So it's not really smartphones, but there is picture capabilities and everything. We're sending pictures to people and text messages and stuff like that. So it is almost closer to current things, and they use it very well. But yeah, to see him just kind of go throughout the city, and he has it's like God gives him all of these things
These are things that you can fix your way. And every time you think that he has, because the movie tells you there's many times, this here to fix it, here's you can fix it, you have these things you can fix it. He never fixes anything of his issues. He, if anything, he just doubles down everything he does. Mm-hmm. And it's unreal because everything he does, he gambles everything. And even like the craziest things to gamble that aren't even his, he gambles things away that aren't even his. He puts things on the line that aren't even his. And it's unreal the amount of trust, the amount of thing that he thinks that he has. And it's really cool how the movie starts also. And they bookend with the gem thing, right? They go into this, like, how the gems are made and how this craziness is. And the opening, yeah. And then it's same thing how it ends. It's kind of like this weird loophole. Not loophole, but weird, like, enveloping thing. And that's what ends up being. But it's crazy.
And that ending, dude.
It's unreal. It's unreal to watch all this, to see everything happen, and like
this movie feels what an exposed nerve feels.
It's like unnerving. It's because it really bothers me at everything he does bothers me. Everything
and it's number one,
and it's my number one. But it's my number one because he does it so well.
No, I know. The movie's so like, inviting. It's so intriguing.
It is very intriguing. Yeah. Is that he does everything so well? He's potentially ruins every relationship he has in his life. Just to have this fix of having the next big thing at all times. He has to have the next big thing, next big thing at all times. And it's unreal that he's willing to sacrifice everything but nothing at the same time. Like, and he's juggling plates all over the place. He's got a girlfriend here, a smoking hot girlfriend.
Definitely. Jesus Christ.
Amazing. Who's head over heels over him, right? Also.
Because
there's many times in the movie where if you feel like the movie's going to be like, well, here's the part where you're just in it for the money. And she's like, no, I'll send you a picture of my
cooch. No, she's crazy and they fight a lot, sure. Yeah, but like, right.
I'll send you a picture of my cooch. I'll send you this. I'll send you that. I love you. You know, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's really weird because, you know, Adam Sandler also doesn't look like the perfect form of hygiene either in this movie, because he looks like he never took a shower ever. He changes all the time, don't get me wrong. I feel like he's just always on the go. And he never has time for anything actually important in his life, but for him it's everything's important that he's doing right then and there. And there's nothing else more important than that. In a weird way, that's good for a businessman, right? But he's a bad businessman because he's gambling all of his business away all the time. So it's really weird. And then to see that ending, to see it, it's like, man, I had nerves. I was like, I swear, like, I was doing trembling. Body was shaking everywhere. I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, I felt everything for him, you know? And then there's another scene also where he's gambling before that. I guess the first time that he says that he could have won big, but they pulled the bet for him. What's it called? That time that happens, because you see everything happening for him, you're like, wow, it's actually working out. And you know, I still got nervous for him, but not as nervous as the last time. It's unreal. And to see that played out, it was a great, great ride. I can't see this again in theaters for sure, but I'll watch it again on DVD or whatever. And it was just a really powerful performance from Adam Sandler, and the movie overall worked. Safdie brothers, right?
Safdie, yeah.
Yeah, the Safdie brothers are the ones who did this movie.
Yeah, they did A Good Time, which we reviewed here on the
show. Which we reviewed on the show, yeah. So, I mean, more power to them. It worked out really well, and I hope this movie does well for them, that they can kind of do whatever they want with anything else. Because it'd be cool to see something, whatever they want to do. It'd be really cool to see that. Because that would be two good movies that I've seen from them. So
definitely.
Where do these guys get precious black opals? That's what that is.
A black opal.
I do my research. These guys live near the Whalo mines, which primarily is red opals, which aren't worth. Okay. But these you can't get your hands on these things. You understand?
Really?
So look, I say to myself, how do I get a hold of these guys? And I managed to track these guys down. I buy one from them.
Holy.
What is that? That's right here. That's the rock. That's the rock. That's the stone.
Holy,
I got
it. Look how this is winking.
Took me 17 months to get this thing. Holy, okay? Just look at this. Hang on for a second. Go through my look. Be careful. That's my best look. All right? I want you to look. Look at it.
You really
get right to it. That's history right there. You understand?
How many carats is this?
Good, what? 4,000 or 5,000 carats? $3,000 a carat? I'm not
Why has it got so many colors in it, man? What is this?
That's the thing. They say you can see the whole universe in opals. That's how f***ing old they are.
Holy shit.
I've been telling you. That's why I'm wanting you to see it.
Yo, that's crazy, man.
From stone to stone. Garnet's a stone. You know that. That's $1 million opal you're holding. Straight from the Ethiopian Jewish tribe. I mean, this is old school, Middle Earth.
You got a dinosaur, Jim.
A dinosaur, that's right. The dinosaur is there. It's 110 million years old. At the least. Look, man, it's cool, man. Can't lean on the glass here.
Yeah, so those are our top 10 movies of 2019. Okay, so let's do honorable mentions. So my number 11, I mean, not that I actually number them. I wrote numbers to them, but they don't mean anything. Uncut Gems for me, it's really close to the list. Us was very close to the list.
Same.
Shadow, which is the Wuxia film made by the guy who did Hero and House of Thousand Daggers or something it's called. I forget the name of it.
You're about to say Corpses.
Corpses, yeah. Yeah, almost said that. High Life, Doctor Sleep, Avengers Endgame in my short list, The Art of Self-Defense, very good. The Nightingale, really fucked up. It's hard to recommend a movie that's so fucking horrifying to watch. Ad Astra, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. El Camino made my short list. Little Women was like my number 12 or 11.
Oh, really?
It's so good.
I have to watch it.
It's very good. I wish... give it more time in my head, maybe it would have made it on there. I still really like The Souvenir, as fucked up as it was. American Factory, really good documentary on Netflix. Yeah, those are roughly, I mean, there's a lot more, but those are roughly. Greta, I really like too. What's your honorable mentions?
Us, for sure. Yeah. I had El Camino on mine as well. I did actually have Frozen 2 on my list, but it was just like nowhere top 20 or whatever. It's just there. I had Knives Out. I had The Good Liar.
Oh, yeah, The Good Liar.
I had Greta as well, because I knew that's one of my movies that came out first half of the year.
Definitely.
That did well. I actually put... I like Bombshell more than I thought that I did. Hmm. One of those movies. But, yeah, that's about it.
Also, there's some, like, surprising little hits, like... You know, like, I was thinking of Ready or Not. You know, it's like a movie that probably no one thought much of it, but it delivered exactly what the trailers kind of promised.
Yeah.
And it was really surprisingly nice. Like, Anna, I think, was a better version of Red Sparrow. Rocket Man was slightly better than a regular, typical biopic. You know, things like that. Like, some things were like...
I guess you could say that, yeah.
Middle-tier movies that were...
Middle, yeah, I can say that, yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the best stuff in the year. You know, you think of, I mentioned Brad Pitt and Florence Pugh as being their years. It's also Scarlett Johansson's year. You think of Marriage Story. You think of Jojo Rabbit plays the mother of the child there. And then, obviously, Avengers Endgame. You know, delivering a very good performance in an experimental blockbuster franchise. You know, she had a really good year, too. Midsommar's screaming scene that we talked about before.
Yeah.
That kind of holds a lot as instantly, like, memory. I can remember the entire thing.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites right there.
Share the Pain.
Yep. Yep. Here's another great fucking moment in the year is Captain America grabbing that hammer for
yeah.
the first time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Dude, that was good.
That's a good one, yeah.
Not to mention Captain Marvel's entrance to that battle, too, was very good. I think that was really set up really nicely. When she was, like, being attacked by the starships or whatever.
Yes.
Like, out of the blue. You got the piano scene in Under the Silver Lake. Remember that scene with the old man?
Oh, yeah. Dude, that's a crazy scene. I do remember that.
That was such a heartbreaking, strange scene.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. If you ever had any ties to any of those songs, yes.
What? Yeah, but you recognize
them.
You recognize all of them, right? Yeah. The John Wick knife scene.
That's a good scene,
In the opening, and the shotgun horse-kicking scene. The
shotgun horse-kicking
scene. It's just horses for shotguns. The doppelganger's intro, when they're at the house, and she starts speaking, and she tells her story.
For what?
In Us.
Oh, Us, yeah. Sorry, I heard Austria, and I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
I think that actress should, Lupita Nyong'o might be, I mean, that's my candidate for best actress. Maybe of the year. I mean, there's a few others for sure, but like, man, that's just a good. That's a good double performance too. Obviously,
yeah.
I have another one here. The intruder alert scene in Dr. Sleep. I really like that a lot when she's all the alarms blare out in the mind of the little girl. the minute of silence we get in the A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood in the cafe, that was really poignant and powerful for me. You have anything like that? Oh, the action scene on the moon in Ad Astra. Badass scene.
Yeah, that was
that was really cool.
That was a good one, yeah.
Do you have anything like that? Any standout scenes or or
man.
Or anything that comes back to you, comes into your mind?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. You said some good ones. Oh, shit. Yeah, no, I really can't. Everything else you kind of said.
Yeah.
For me, yeah, everything else was in there.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
Crocodile Rock and Rocket Man, I really like that scene. Now he's into some of the disappointments. Now, that just doesn't mean just like the hate list. There's some movies out there that we knew it wasn't going to be very good. We're not going to mention those necessarily. But movies that maybe you thought were going to be good, you hoped good things about, did not turn out so well. Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, I do. Triple Frontier. Man, that's a disappointment.
Oh, you were hoping good things? I guess I was hoping some good things.
I was hoping at least something decent from it.
Yeah, you're right. I did too. I just forgot about that movie.
Yeah, it fell off. The Dead Don't Die, I expected a little bit more from that. I liked what we talked over.
I don't know what people said about the movie. I'm like, oh, I didn't see that at all. But
well, I liked our conversation. I like breaking it down. I like doing that. But overall, the movie was kind of like, I'd have to watch it again to get all that and then get into. I don't want to put that much effort into a movie to just extrapolate all the information from it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But that was one of those.
For me, Rob Zombie's Three from Hell. The end of the trilogy for his Devil's Rejects.
No bueno.
I really love Devil's Rejects. That's what I was kind of going into that movie with, knowing that. But nah, Three from Hell is not very good, in my opinion.
I got you. The Lion King was pretty bad.
Well, I expected that to be bad. That's my worst movie of the year. If I had made a Razzies, that'd be my number one worst movie of the year.
Wow.
By like a long shot. That's the Parasite opposite. You know, that's number one by a long shot.
I guess.
So this is a movie by Steve Soderbergh that I didn't really like, super enjoy. And a lot of people didn't really talk about it that much. Was The Laundromat, which I enjoyed things in it. And obviously Meryl Streep was really good in it and all that. But like, I liked his High Flying Bird way better. That's a really good movie. But The Laundromat did not work so well for me. Gemini Man also not super well, even though I had some good stuff in it.
You know what? I will say, and I'll go back to best scene in the movie that I saw was watching Gemini Man in HDR.
Oh, yeah, you saw it.
I saw it in HDR. It's a 4K HDR. Sorry, Obama. Thanks, Obama. Anyways, I'm sorry. I didn't see it in 4K HDR, but I did see it in HDR. Watching that and watching the fight, I know you said the motorcycle scene was really, that whole fight scene in general, that parkour leading up to the motorcycle scene, that was something.
No, that's a cool badass scene. I like that scene a lot.
Yeah,
I should put that on the list.
But I really did expect more. I hated the end of that movie.
Oh my god, I know.
That was the worst. That movie should have just ended.
Yesterday did not turn out as well. I had hopes for that movie.
You know what?
Because I like that screenwriter and I like Danny Boyle.
I know.
And it did not.
I had the same problem with that. And yes, the problem with yesterday was I just needed it. I don't know.
I just need to work beyond his fucking concept.
I guess, That would have been better.
Here's some other movies that are good by a lot of people that are like good, and I would agree that they are very good movies. I just did not get them.
Okay.
One is Transit, which we reviewed here. I didn't super get that movie. Now I know what happens and all that, and I understand why it's good. And once I hear people talk about like reviews or whatever, I'm getting it. But like, I didn't get it. I just didn't get it.
Which one was Transit?
Remember, it was a Polish film. It was set in modern day, but it's meant to be taking place during World War II. It's about that guy who takes the identity of that.
Oh yeah,
of that biographer or something, some historian. Yeah. The Amazing Jonathan documentary, which a lot of people raved about. But I genuinely hate it. One of my worst scenes of the year is that whole scene with him taking that drugs.
I remember
the
you.
Fucking
you,
Christ of that movie. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The last two here are really higher on more people, at least critics. One is The Lighthouse. I didn't super get The Lighthouse.
You know, and I was
not the way I got The Witch, anyway.
So, yeah, Lighthouse for me was a movie that I went to go see it, and I don't know if this is going to make your top 10 or top anything.
I know it's a good movie. I just don't know where.
Right. And that was a problem for me. I was watching the movie and I was like, I'm watching some powerful performances here.
It was a struggling review.
What is going on? Yeah, that was a struggling review for sure.
And the last one here is The Last Black Man in San Francisco. That was one that's making a lot of top tens. I don't get that. I don't get it. I understand what I was going for, and the more I think back on it, I'm starting to see it. But like, it just can't. It's not for me. It just feels like the nature of how it's all presented. It didn't really mix well for me. Even though I like the stuff it's mixing and all that it's doing individually in parts, I really did enjoy. It was just not for me. No love for San Francisco. I mean, I understand that whole thing at the ending. The ending's really good, actually. The whole idea is you can't hate something unless you love it. Love that scene. But, like, I don't know. And it also has one of my favorite scenes in there when the guy's directing the group of people. Like, it's some good stuff in it. But yes. Didn't get it.
I agree. Yeah.
Just didn't get it. Didn't love it that much, is my point. So that's how I felt. We also reviewed that, and we also had a hard time going through that
movie.
We did.
It was one of those movies that I had heard about.
Yeah.
I think I picked it, yeah.
Yeah. So that's all I have for this stuff. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I can't think of anything else, man. I mean, I wish I saw more movies.
Yeah.
You know what? Glass was another movie that which is early in the year.
The puddle scene. I'm not a big fan of it, but it's very memorable.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's fucked up. But, yeah. Yeah, no, Glass, I really like Glass, yeah. Still.
Alita was a great movie, visually great.
Yeah, those fight scenes are really good.
Fight scenes were good. And I hope it does do well enough to where they make another one. You never know.
It did make some money, but I don't know if it made its money back. I'm not sure. Maybe.
Well, you never know.
Maybe it did.
What's that? That's not for us.
All right, so that is it for our best films of 2019. We are going to call it quits until next time. We're going to be doing our best TV shows, and we're going to have a special guest. So stay with us for next week. Until then, you can always follow me at Letterboxd and on Twitter at Armin Filmmaker, Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N, Roth.
You could follow me on Twitter. I have a new handle.
Again.
This is for the new decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's at Don Rafa _ L. So it's Don Rafael.
Yeah, I get it.
So it works out great for me. Anyways.
Don Rafa. _ L.
Yeah.
Yeah, not hard.
EL, not that. Not,
oh, EL, okay.
Yeah, L.
Not that, the it's letter L.
Not the letter L, yeah.
Got it.
Same, spelling my name.
Gotcha. All right, so, so next week. Oh, you said that already. So great. Until then, I'm Oscar.
I'm Ross.
Later.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie? Oh, my.
You didn't hear it from me.